and the professional journalists treat it as if it was some sort of, at best, horse race and, at worst, popularity contest. Ooh, she's white. Ooh, he's black. Is there anybody in this listening?
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Coming up on 2 minutes past the hour, this is live, this is real. Sorry about yesterday, but I live in the hills and hollers, and it's a 100-mile round trip to take the kids to the dentist. And if it's a late afternoon appointment, it'll take a bite out of the schedule. But I'm live tonight, so too will be the horn section, so too will be John Fox. Peter Godbold will be a rerun, but he'll be back for sure tomorrow night. And we will have a fine old time tonight. Let's see. Well, wait a minute. What am I thinking? See, I'm a little bit off kilter. This is my Tuesday, but it's not Tuesday. No. It's the middle of the week. It's Wednesday. It's a very, very special day. It's prayer meeting. You know that.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man. Don't you know, he should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah, and thank you to the members of the choir there. I walk around the sanctuary most days, humming that to myself. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. Yes! Come on down the blood-red carpet and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. I am Bishop Bob. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and you are welcome here. You can get your magic cracker any time you want. Come on down or take it on the way out and save it for later. It's that easy. This is prayer meeting, and for tonight, let's see. How about screwed at the hospital and screwed at the Supreme Court? Is that a good start? No, it's a place to start. But I tell you what, Odd had a phone call right at the beginning of the program. Let's see what's going on with Jared. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hey, not much. Got a topic that I figured was special for prayer meeting.
All right.
On Saturday, I had a Easter dinner.
Okay.
Because everybody had stuff to do on Sunday, and I live like 35 minutes away, and I didn't feel like coming down on Sunday. Anyway, my brother was there, and he's gotten big into this religious fundamentalism crap, too.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know what happened, but the conversation turned to his church, or he was talking about his church, and it was just very unusual because he kept talking about how this preacher's the most honest man he knows, And I keep thinking, this is going to turn into one of those situations for him that Malcolm X had with Elijah Muhammad back in the 60s. When Malcolm X, you know, thought this was the most honest man he knew and found out he just, Elijah Muhammad was a complete liar.
Right.
But he went on to it. And he got into Hurricane Katrina, and I couldn't believe what I heard him say next. He said, and this is what this church honestly believes.
Oh, dear.
That Hurricane Katrina was God's wrath because New Orleans was the most sinful city in America.
Yeah, that unfortunately, that has been propagated through a lot of fundy churches in the United States, Jared. It's a... It is a level of cruelty that is incomprehensible to me, and it's certainly it is certainly incompatible with the message of the Nazarene day laborer, because it don't jibe.
Yeah, it don't.
So, and, go ahead.
And this was horrifying to me because when we were growing up, we grew up on a farm, but there was a subdivision around us, and one of his playmates was a black child. You know, we grew up with black kids and everything else, and you know, I grew up in Southwest Ohio, which in Cincinnati I always jokingly refer to as the Midwestern capital of fascism. But still, you know, it's somewhat integrated. It's not like Utah or some very, not trying to bash the South, but very segregated part of the South we grew up in.
No, but Cincinnati's had a lot of in the last 4 or 5 years, horrible, horrible problems with race-based police brutality, hasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people, there was a radio argument years ago where two radio hosts, one from Cleveland, one from Cincinnati, went into it about an Ohio State football game riot. And it was Bill Cunningham, the guy from Cincinnati.
Oh, him.
Yeah. He turned to this Cleveland radio host who goes by the phrase Munch and said they should have had Cincinnati PD there. They'd been kicking ass. And Munch said, without pause and stutter, no, we don't need black kids getting shot in the back.
Well, that's kind of part of the reason for the Cincinnati police problems. They had a little...
Yeah, well, you know, the Cincinnati police has this really nasty habit of killing unarmed black men and then lying about it when they're put on trial.
Yeah.
And, of course, what happens is the prosecutor, because the prosecutor at that time was a right-wing freak, would never put him up on charges, but the police chief has to get rid of this guy because he's a liability. You know, if you got to go to trial and you got one of these jokers testifying on you, you know, your defense attorney could have the brains of mush. And he could still get his client off.
Oh, yeah. And I saw another one of these stories the other day about some police brutality, and the police chief was saying something like, this is a real shame.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we sort of have those. Then that problems are all over America, and you know it's now reared its head in Lima, Ohio, where this cop on a
that's the pl- yeah the Lima, Ohio case exactly. Yeah, what are the details there?
Shot the unarmed woman.
Yeah,
with the baby in her hands.
Yeah, he shot the baby's finger off to get the lady.
Yeah, and you know what they charge that joker with?
Involuntary. Well, involuntary manslaughter or something like that, I do believe.
A misdemeanor.
Yeah.
For Christ's sakes, a misdemeanor. You know, there's some serious crimes. Well, you know, there's some minor offenses that are felonies. I think shooting an unarmed woman in a child, a baby, should be a felony.
Well, back up just a minute, Jared. I mean, let's get the whole story here. Just to be absolutely crystal clear on this story, our chat room moderator, ELO, sent this to me, and for some reason or another, I never got it into the show. I'm glad you brought it up. The woman wasn't even a suspect.
Yeah, that as well.
I mean, she was truly an innocent bystander, and the cop drew down on her, intentionally blew her away, and shot her kid. And we're talking about, what, a one-year-old? Shot the kid's finger off to kill her.
I read like a six-month-old.
Oh, was it? Okay. I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, no way that you can interpret interpret that as any sort of a threat. There's not a lot of threat coming from a mama holding her infant.
Yeah. And this also where he goes back into the...
And that's the one where the police chief said it was a shame the guy was charged.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, what a crock... You know, any rational person would disassociate themselves with this person right away. But no, this guy is sticking up for him still. And this is where I get into the spirituality of the African-American community again. Us white Americans are really lucky that this group, this segment of the American population is very spiritual, because if that would have happened in Northern Ireland with UK-associated government officials and an unarmed woman that wasn't even a suspect holding her child and getting shot to death and the child getting shot as well, oh my God, could you imagine the bloodshed that would come out of that?
Oh, yeah, or in the Middle East. I mean, this would... something like that would cause the Israeli Defense Forces to go helicopter rocket an entire apartment building, or cause the Palestinians to go bomb a pizza parlor.
Yeah.
No, I
there would be the blood would be up to your knees after they were finished figuring that out.
And then of course, Monday night I mentioned the column, and Eugene Finnerman had put me onto it. The column by Pat Buchanan, where he suggested that African Americans should be grateful for having been brought here as slaves.
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
Astonishing. Just astonishing.
Yeah, and anyway, when I got back to the black community with my brother and how their spirituality, my brother got in this segment, this spiel about how non-religious people are always mortified at funerals, how they're sobbing and crying because they don't have a, quote, relationship with Jesus or God, and how we don't know what's going to happen on the end. He says, but people at his funerals are very, you know, they're very happy and cheerful and everything else. And I brought up again the black community, because the black community is very religious and very church-going. Christ, they go to church like I used to go to football practice in high school two times a day.
Oh,
you know?
God, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, well, every time I think of the black community, I think of crack dealers. I don't see that as godly. And
hey,
I keep remembering.
No, your brother did not say that. Tell me he didn't say that.
He did say that. He said that right to my... And it shook me like I was in a car wreck. And I'm like... And I just want to go, you do realize that you have black friends and stuff. You know, you grew up with a black family, a very rock-ribbed, religiously oriented, very goal-oriented, very education-oriented black family, and how they don't do any of that bullshit. But he said that,
What you're pointing out here, though, if I may interrupt for just a second, is what I was talking about Monday night in terms of lines in the sand and what some people are calling America's nonviolent civil war. this thing is splitting families, and you're not. I'm not discounting at all what you've told me, because, God, I don't know what I'd have done.
Yeah.
But I hear these stories time after time after time from people who can't talk to their brothers and sisters because their brothers and sisters have become fundies and had their minds poisoned and cannot engage in rational discourse anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to beat the hell out of him right there, but he's got my 13-month-old nephew in his hands, which also scares the hell out of me. You know, my mom and my grandma are there, and if I just beat the hell out of him right there, it's just going to make problems worse.
Sure.
And then I had to hear this spiel about he's in this Church of God nonsense.
Oh, dear.
And he talks about how the true word of God was... King James Bible.
Oh, wow. Jared, you were deep in the swamp, brother.
Oh, no. I didn't know God spoke bad 17th century English.
Neither did I. And turns out
English crown.
Right, and turns out to have been a very, very bad translator at that.
Yeah. You know, my brother told me that, and I guess he didn't realize, you know, I was once a history major in college. I'm a social science ed major, but, you know, I've taken a lot of history courses. I know about King James.
Yeah.
King James is anything but religious or spiritual.
No, it was pure pragmatism, because people were killing each other over their Bible translations.
Yeah. And then I had to remind them, well, you do realize, you know, the earliest, you know, I went into the Jewish Torah, and then later the Latin and Greek translations of the New Testament, and, you know, all this, and he just wasn't having any of it. He's like, you know, it's that, because the King James, it doesn't cut out all the stuff that people don't like. Hell, it left out a lot of stuff that were in the Torah and also in the original Greek transcripts and Latin transcripts. But that aside, I was just astonished. And it's also now affecting his career choices, because now he's working for this roofing company.
Christian Boss, right?
What?
Christian Boss?
Yes, yeah. Snake Handler Joe's Roofing.
Yeah. God. And probably not as good a money as he could get on, yeah. Because it's for Jesus.
Yeah, because it's for Jesus, and not only that, he doesn't need any health benefits, retirement plan, or any of that other stuff, because he's got Jesus. You know, because when I got out of high school, I started working at an automotive factory.
Does he not realize that D. James Kennedy, you know, one of the chief fundies of recent memory, dropped dead of a heart attack? I mean, Jesus wasn't much good there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You know, when you have a cancer diagnosis, they're not going to...
Now, see,
I got Jesus healthcare policy.
There's a website out there, Jared, and it's worth the time. It's why does God, if you Google it, you'll get close. Why does God hate amputees?
Yeah.
And it's all about the fact that, you know, you hear about, oh, he cured my cancer. Oh, he made my goiter go away. But you never, not one single person, you never see the testimony. You know, I woke up with my arm back this morning.
Yeah.
He's running around healing all kinds of stuff and making stuff disappear on x-rays, but he never, never, never grows a limb back. I mean, for heaven's sakes, a planarium can grow its head back.
Yeah.
But not so much. No. Doesn't happen.
But I got into it because I always knew these jokers existed, but I didn't know to what depth they were out there and how low they would sink these people. Because my brother's telling me about the income coming out of his church. He says his minister only makes $18,000 a year out of the church. I'm like, bullshit, because his minister's also the owner of the construction company.
Oh, hello, nurse. Yeah, okay.
That guy uses that as a front to funnel money.
Oh, that's a beautiful little racket.
Oh, yeah. It's a big deal. My brother says that he goes to church 3 hours before they have to go to work and starts praying. I'm like, bullshit. He's doing accounting or something. You know, he is covering. You know, he's doing some type of scam.
Well, that reminds me. Did you? There's a story out there that I had earlier today. about a preacher behaving in typical preacherly fashion. I think this is from upstate Pennsylvania, because it references Williamsport. It concerns the Reverend Raymond Clayton, Jared. This past Monday, he pleaded guilty in federal court in Williamsport, PA, to a charge of access device fraud. That's credit card fraud. 43-year-old minister of the gospel, former pastor of Grace Fellowship Church. And what he was doing was scamming the social security numbers of his flock in order to get bogus credit cards that he was then using to, support his lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. This is what these people do. And this church that my brother goes to, it's sort of been in this segment of Middletown, Ohio. There's a section called Post Town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very economically depressed, but this church, for some reason, has just expanded dramatically. And
They grow like cancer, Jared. They grow like cancer.
Oh, yeah, it grows like cancer. And I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to make a mega church out there, and they're going to fleece these people that live in trailer parks, for Christ.
Sure they are, and they'll put up the great big Sony Jumbotrons. They will get a sound system that would make Kiss blush.
Yeah.
And they'll have the house band. That's why I love playing that song at the beginning of every Wednesday night from that Australian comedy program, Chaser.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I sort of missed the old intro with the lady from Green Acres.
I'm going to find her again, because I think we should be able to do them together. But the thing is, that sounds so much like this modern praise rock. And, 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm getting done with a broadcast day, sometimes I sit down in the living room, sometimes Agnes will still be up, and we'll do a little channel surfing, and we'll start, it's praise rock now from the Time Life Library. And it's all these really, really icky bands that all sound like Air Supply.
Yeah, they do.
And, and it's just like the song says, $14.95, and it's yours. And Jesus isn't running the printing press and printing money either.
No, he isn't.
So that makes it the obligation. Well, there's the old story about the preacher who took the offertory collection plate receipts every Sunday, and he'd walk outside, Jared, and he'd say, "Lord, I'm putting all of today's offerings in this here hat. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw it all up in the air. And Lord, what you want, you take. And whatever falls to ground's going to be mine." And it turned out to be a pretty nice arrangement with God.
Yeah. You just sort of always wish a really large gust of wind would happen simultaneously as he did that.
Yeah, you do. But a lot of the things. I sit around wishing a lot of things. But, the whole business about Obama's church and Hillary's church and, I don't know, McCain.
We're falling in that same claptrap as well.
Sure. We're sitting here talking about Jeremiah Wright. Sorry, Jared.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Wright, while John McCain is swanning around with Rod Parsley, who is one of the single greatest hate mongers this country has to offer, puts Father Coughlin to shame.
Christ, yeah, I mean, I hear this stuff, I'm like, Jesus, this guy is in my state? My state's not an openly racist state. My state has its problems. My state is an unusual state because it'll produce William Tecumseh Sherman and guys like Parsley, creators and destroyers. We have Antioch College and, guys like Rod Parsley. So it's always a very diverse state. But Jesus, this guy's allowed to say this and he's not automatically carted off to a loony bin somewhere.
Well, that's why I keep saying, Jared, that the First Amendment has been reduced to little more than a life support system for the religion industry.
Yeah, it has been.
Because, you've got to be in a free speech zone if you want to go make your opinions known about George Bush when he shows up somewhere,
On the other hand, if you want to stand on the street corner and swig strychnine and handle snakes and roll on the ground and speak in tongues, well, that's your First Amendment right to free religion, no matter how many people you put at risk.
Yeah,
it goes without saying. Jared, it's great to hear from you, brother.
Oh, thank you.
Don't be such a stranger, okay?
I thought you'd like to hear that story.
I do indeed. And, you know, listen, I wish I had some advice, but I don't. I mean,
I can't think of anything. You know, I'm...
Talk basketball. Talk basketball. You know, talk the Reds prospect for this season. But the thing is, when you're doing that with these people, sooner or later, they'll find a way to Jesus up that conversation, too. That's what makes it so doggone difficult.
Oh, yeah. It drives you crazy.
You know, if Jesus is on it, if Jesus gives him his curveball and that thing don't hang, oh, he's going to be blessed this season. Probably be a 20-game winner. Oh!
I wish Jesus showed up and resurrect the Reds bullpen, for crying out loud.
You know, there's a heel in desperately in need.
Yeah.
is Junior playing again this year?
Who?
Junior Griffey.
Junior, yeah.
He's
our favorite native son, and we're never going to give him up.
Yeah, but you know, I wish Jesus would give him a full season.
Yeah, me too. Because it seems like he really cares and really wants to win.
Yeah, he does, and you know, it's a hip pointer or, you know, an Achilles tendon, you know, and I'm not saying he's dogging it. He's not, but, you know, he's an older guy now. Maybe if Jesus could just bless him with one full season to sit there and just knock the cover off the baseball, that'd be sweet. You got to understand,
oh, yeah.
You got to understand, Jared, my dad was a hardcore Reds fan, and I was raised a Reds fan.
Yeah, and so was I. Southwest Ohio. I was raised off the Big Red Machine stories. And
well, you want weird? I mean, try growing up in Alabama a Reds fan.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
let me guess, 700 WLW?
Every night. I mean, there were times once upon a time when there were only two divisions in each league, you know, there was a time when the Reds and Dodgers getting together was just big.
Oh, yeah, the old Western Division.
Exactly, right. And my dad would put me in the car with him, and we'd drive out to the highest point we could find in Lauderdale County so that he could bring in WLW on one of those late-night games that doesn't start till 11 o'clock because it's coming from the West Coast.
Oh, yeah.
And you know,
the stories about the bench-clearing brawls, and those were great.
Oh, man. And you know, what great baseball. I mean, Johnny Bench was my hero. I you know, Little League and all that stuff. I was a catcher, man. I didn't want to, you know, pitch. Eh, the hell with that. I wanted to be a catcher, knock the cover off the ball. So yeah, I mean,
ours was Pete Rose when we were growing up as kids.
Oh yeah, Pete was one of mine too. But I gravitated toward Johnny Bench for some reason or another because he was just such a monster at his position. He defined it.
You know what the ironic thing was? My house was less than 5 miles away where Pete Rose got busted for gambling. Franklin Ohio, because he would send his runner up to this bar in Franklin, Ohio to put his bets, and that's where they were doing all the wire fraud and everything out of, and that's where he got busted.
Wow.
Yeah. Thought about strange, huh?
Yeah, that is strange. Jared, take care and have yourself a good evening, and like I said, don't be a stranger.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And let's see what's let's see here, what do we got? Hi, who have I got? Oh, gave up. And hi, who's there?
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you, dear?
I'm fine. Listen, if the King James Version was good enough for St. Paul, it's good enough for us.
Oh, there's always a comedian in the group. Very nicely done.
One thing that the thing was translated several times. I mean, it was if it was in the original King James language, you couldn't hardly read it probably now. You know. But personally, I like the King James Version because I like the language.
Oh, I like the King James Version for the same reason I like Shakespeare. It's a beautiful version of the English language.
Yeah, yeah. But, Yeah, that's what a lot of people do believe that, you know, that, and I can't believe that two brothers would have such different comprehensions, you know. I don't know, some way I think they have this hypnotic spell over you, because I've been under it for a little bit.
Oh, and Chick Publications, you know, my favorite. my favorite reading at rest stop urinals across the country.
Yeah,
because there's always anytime you go. Well, this is kind of a guy thing, but there's always
a
Chick Publication.
Seen them in a while.
Oh, they're out there. They are out there. Yeah, totally insane.
They used to be around here a lot, but I wanted to say something about crack. My knowledge of it. I live in kind of a crack neighborhood.
Yeah,
but I mean it's settled down. It's not as obvious, but. Nearly all the guys out here have used crack, soil crack, whatever, white and black. One thing I've noticed different, the different people I know, and I have talked to someone who was a retired guardsman from New York,
mm-hmm.
and he said I was right, you know, but it was my observation. The ones that I know that have gotten in trouble, the black people usually get in trouble for selling crack. And the white people usually go for writing bad checks to get crack. And, you know, they sell it too, but for some reason the blacks get caught for selling.
Well, no, what it boils down, the inequity in the federal law is that a white kid can get busted with powder cocaine and do roughly maybe a fourth of the time the same amount of rock crack cocaine does for an African American.
Uh-huh.
It's purely racist, and a lot of it goes back to something called the federal sentencing guidelines.
You mean we have racism down here?
Yeah, I hate to break it to you.
Ain't funny, is it?
Yeah.
Bad joke.
I know. No worries. But the federal sentencing guidelines take sentencing prerogatives and powers out of the hands of Article III federal district judges and hook them to a schedule that they can't get around, which is why you wind up with people, you know, doing life for, you know, a 50-cent or a $5
yeah.
pizza theft.
Yeah.
And three strike laws and all that heinous, hateful garbage.
On the news down here, there's a woman that's getting out of prison. She's been there for like close to 20 years. She's finally getting out because she had a little bit of a crack, you know.
Meanwhile, Noelle Bush walks the streets.
Oh yeah, well yeah. I wonder where she is.
Well, that was a private family matter.
Well, it wasn't so private when she was in Orlando, but it has become private, you're right.
Well, Jeb Bush said he wouldn't comment on it because it was a private family matter. It wasn't anybody's business.
Yeah, right. But he was commenting on it a lot when she was having to go back and forth in front of the judge. But anyway, the one thing that I do know the difference, if you're in prison for writing checks, then you can get all kind of rights. Whereas if you're in for selling crack or doing crack or whatever, you lose your rights. In other words, you can't get any kind, if you've got children, you can't get any kind of public assistance. But, cause I know that, well, this one particular white guy knew that he was just as sorry as they come. And, he could get all kind of benefits, you know. When he would get out of prison, I think he finally, I don't know if he's finally in jail for good or not, I don't know. But anyway, that's my observation. And there was for a while we had prostitutes, you know, walking the streets, you know, and we had one church that they wanted to leave because of that. I was like, well, that's not very biblical. You know, but we had one, I had one, friend, this black lady that was, she was a minister. She and I were about the same age. And, a lot of the Johns, you know, in their pickup trucks, they go in different people's yards. And hers was one of them that they liked to go into. and they'd go out in her backyard. And one of her daughters told them, said, "My mother's coming out, and she's coming with her Bible." And the men had run away, and the girls, she'd go out there, and she'd say, "You know, you're pretty girls, and God's got a better plan for your life." And I thought that was I thought that was a real Christian.
Well, that is nice. That is very nice.
And she's passed away since then, but she was a wonderful, wonderful woman. And she had sons that went to prison, too. It was a very prolific out here. And it wasn't kids, but only. The most ones I knew were grown men and grown women. And the girls, you know, they were on such crack. We had murders out here. And they did do some, you know, they said all they could do was run them off. You know, the laws, the way the laws are. But she was trying to help them. And I thought that was very, like I said, to me, that's what a real Christian is.
Yeah, I don't know. I know some that I think are close and closer than others, but please remember, and we can go into this because it is prayer meeting. Please remember, Jesus never called himself a Christian. There were no Christians.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking about what we, you know, people call themselves Christians. What they mean, what it means today, what people think it means today. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying maybe Christ-like or something. That's what I mean by it. It's not what you say. It's what you do and how you feel. You know, how you are inside, I believe. And I think a lot of people are very misguided. But anyway, that's the way it goes. But that's my observation of crack. One time I had a boyfriend who was on crack, and he would work all week. He'd get paid every Friday, he'd be broke Saturday morning. And then he tried to get beer, you know, to get it, help him to get through the week.
It's a tough existence. And that's the thing, that, you know, all these churches that say that they are, you know, meeting the spiritual needs, never mind the spiritual needs. What did he say? Feed my sheep? He didn't say pray for my sheep. He said feed them.
Yeah, he did. That's right. That's a good point. That's a good point. Well, and it also says that you don't say to somebody, you know, that you see this, that they're in need, and you say, "Oh, God bless you," or whatever, you know, and that's my translation. And then you just say, "Go your merry way." And if you could have helped them, you know, the people say, "Oh, well, you know, you might be helping the wrong person." Well, so what?
Yeah.
And, you know, but that's the way it goes.
I know.
But anyway, that as far as the translation, I mean, I wish I could know that that translation is the original, all that original King James. I mean, it's very, some people think that the one that we have today, the translation that we have today is hard to understand, but the old English would really be hard to understand. Because, like, words have changed meanings and all kind of
stuff. Oh, look, you know, and Adam knew Eve. I mean, come on.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, I think we'd say it a little... We'd say that a little differently now, wouldn't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Bible's pretty plain, though, isn't it?
Clear as mud.
And you know, people say, "Oh, don't say anything about the president. He's a wonderful Christian." Well, baloney, you know, but... God tells it in the Bible, according to the Bible. He tells the plain, unvarnished truth about the people that he cares the most about.
Well,
But, you know, now, no, you don't say nothing. Don't tell the truth about anybody, no matter what. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like you said, if the King James English was good enough for St. Paul, it's good enough for the rest of us.
And some people say that.
It was good for Paul and Silas, and it's good enough for me. Somebody fire up the choir.
But I do know some, you know, that they may not say that, but they say this is, that's the only one that counts. You know, but I don't know. But that's about what I wanted to say. You know.
All right. Well, Juanita, thank you very kindly.
More of your time. And
oh, you're all the time in the world. Don't you worry about it.
We're still working on the police in the county.
Is that you haven't making any progress?
Maybe more this week and for a while, you know. So we've got till the 17th of April. I was talking to the one guy that the original one that came out, and he said he might could give us a little more time. So I'm hoping. Because my son's back lock up on him, and he can't do anything.
There's no let up, is there, Juanita?
No. Nope. But what he's done a beautiful job. Beautiful.
Well, do you think you'll make it? I mean, will you make it by April 17th? If
I hope. That's all I can say is, you know, sometime we think, you know, we had a problem with one of the guys here in Winter Haven that he was so nasty. He was telling me I'm going to have to tear everything out and everything. And the people down at the county seat were really nice. But it just threw us in a tizzy. But I found out he's done my neighbor, this same man that I had a problem with. He's done my neighbor the same way. He's trying to get all kind of money out of him. You know, and this is not a well-to-do neighborhood. If anybody's well-to-do, there is them because he's working at a job. He makes pretty good money. He's a really nice guy, young guy. He's got a big family, and they have like almost $400 light bills they have to pay. Mine is almost $200.
Nobody's ever tried to shake you down for extra money or anything, have they, Juanita?
Oh, yeah. And I don't know why.
Well, no, I mean, trying to get a bribe or something?
Well, I had this feeling that this guy was getting him some extra money. Because he was totally, when the guy from the county seat came out, it was a totally different story. He didn't tell me we were going to have to tear down. He was like, this one over here was saying that we'd have to tear down everything that had already been done. Well, I wasn't going to do it anyway. They were going to have to do it if it was going to be done. But when you don't have the money, they can't get it out of you. But God knows they try.
And, yeah, they do.
Well, you were weren't you just talking about them having something where, he was talking about them building a church where people lived in trailer parks. You know.
Yeah.
And getting, you know, it's just like I said, my gosh, you know, if you're gonna steal something from somebody's got something, but it's like everything you've got, somebody wants it. I've had two in the past 3 months I've had two air conditioners, old air conditioners, stolen, had a ladder stolen, all kind of see my fence that I had has been blown away from the hurricanes. We had all those hurricanes. And so I went out in the yard one day and a guy was out there and he was looking around at some of the stuff we have out there and he said, oh, I didn't know you were home. And he said, I just came to use the bathroom. Well, he came in my yard to use the bathroom.
Nice.
But it seems like this. No matter what you have, somebody wants it. I don't care what it is. And now they're stealing. I think they stole the air conditioners for the copper. You know, copper's gone way up. copper's worth a lot of money now. And we have a doctor out here, a copywriter out here, and he bought a new air conditioner system, you know, where they have the thing that sits outside, and they were trying to get all that copper out of it. And I don't think they were having a success, but they tore it all up, you know, trying to get it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's the way the big ball bounces sometimes.
Well, it does, but please pay attention, you know, like I'm telling you anything.
Do what?
Please pay attention and know that, you know, there are unscrupulous people who will try, you know, who will try to get you to offer them a bribe in order to expedite or give you special treatment or anything like that. And if they do, don't hesitate to contact the authorities.
Yeah. Well, he's supposed to be authority. But, you're talking about calling the police?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. You know, they've got to where they don't come out. We had one sheriff that said if somebody knocked over your mailbox, that wasn't worth coming out for. But, you know, some people, if they don't have somebody, they can't put up a mailbox. He's talking about it didn't cost that much to put one up again. But, so sometimes they come out. I had a lawnmower stolen, and they didn't come out for it. They took the information over the phone. So you just never know.
No, you don't. Well, Juanita, hang in there, dear, and I hope.
I don't mean to be down. I mean,
you got something to be concerned about, and
yeah,
you got till April 17th, and we're all rooting for you.
Thank you.
All right, you take care.
Okay, you take care, too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, about 13 minutes before the hour, before 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. Since it is prayer meeting, something I don't know, you probably heard about it on other shows, but I saved it for prayer meeting because it fits so nicely. The case of, from the Oregonian, the case of a 15-month-old Oregon City girl who died for lack of medical treatment could become the first test of a state law in Oregon that disallows faith healing at the expense of a child's life. Ava Worthington was 15 months old when she died on March the 2nd at home. Not in a hospital, not in a clinic, not in an ambulance. But at home, of nothing more complex than bacterial bronchial pneumonia and infection that could have been cured with rather common antibiotics. The child's breathing was also compromised by a benign cyst that had never been medically addressed and could have been removed from her neck. See, we make jokes about the fact that God never grows any amputated limbs back, that he's all the time making stuff disappear from x-rays, but he can't make limbs reappear, you know, on an elbow or a knee. Because, see, there's a whole lot of maimed people that have come home from Iraq that could use a great big old limb regrowing healing miracle. And they were waiting for God to heal Ava Worthington's bacterial bronchial pneumonia. Because, and see, the sick part of this is even in Oregon, the damned fundies got a law rammed through that says faith healing is okay. This all has to do with a Fundy gang called the Followers of Christ. And the news story refers to it as a fundamentalist Christian denomination. And I call BS. Nothing Christian about them. The news story says, of dozens of children buried since the 1950s in the Followers of Christ Church Cemetery south of Oregon City, at least 21 of them could have been saved by medical intervention. What do you want to bet this gang is pro-life? You know, doesn't want a woman to be able to have an abortion, but won't take their own damn children to the doctor. None of the deaths from that era, including the high-profile case of an 11-year-old boy who died from untreated diabetes, resulted in prosecution. So the state legislature had a big argument over religious freedom in 1999, and they passed a compromise bill that protected these creeps. The 1999 law eliminated Oregon's spiritual healing defense in cases of second-degree manslaughter, first- and second-degree criminal mistreatment, and non-payment of child support. They still don't know whether or not they're going to charge. They don't know if they're going to charge the people who, for all intents and purposes, murdered Ava Worthington. The sheriff's office will not identify the parents, but property and other public records indicate Carl Brent Worthington, age 28, and Raylene Marie Worthington, age 25, own the home where Ava Worthington, is it Anna or Ava? Come on. Well, one says Ava, the other says Anna. Let's call the whole thing off, where she died. And they knew she was deadly ill, because while she was sick, at least 100 cars and trucks claimed every parking space on the street for 3 to 4 days straight. You know what they were doing? The fools were praying for her. The only thing they didn't pray for was a competent physician. They've buried Ava Worthington, and next to the spot where she was buried, 15 months old, there's another grave that says Baby Boy Worthington from 2001. If you take your kid to the doctor and you're a member of the Followers of Christ, you are ostracized. Religion scores another one, because they're protected by the First Amendment. Deadly business. And it's a roll of the dice. Remember, every single religion on earth, with very few exceptions, states that if you're not part of their club, you're not going to heaven. So, you know, maybe the followers of Christ are right, and therefore you can't take your kids to a doctor. And how many times have courts sided with the religion industry over the rights to life of a little child? The Jehovah's Witnesses will allow a child or an adult to bleed to death rather than have a transfusion, because they read in their screwed up translation that you have to honor the blood, and therefore a transfusion will send you to hell, even though it saves a life. And the court says, well, that's their First Amendment rights. You know, the people who hate women's insides are constantly saying, well, where's the fetus's rights? Why ain't it got no rights? Well, here's some that are on the ground, alive. And they're as quiet as Ava Worthington's grave. And little baby boy Worthington buried in 2001. Oh, gosh. Am I being a blustering downer again? I'm sorry. Ava Worthington is singing hymns to Jesus with the angels. There. Is that better? She's in a better place. She's happy now. She's got a... She's got her little heavenly care bear tucked in her arms and is sitting in the bosom of Abraham. Jesus be praised. Sorry, hard to find a way to be uplifting about the wasted life of Ava Worthington. Lord, Lord, Lord. We'll come back with the second hour. And there is an abundance of material for tonight. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's toll free. Or 304-658-5453. Or 658-3333. Old habits die hard. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Sometimes I can pick a bumper. Welcome back to the second hour of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Anything on your mind? Share it. Don't bottle it up. Stuff's not good for you. 304-658-3333 or 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Get you straight into the studio and straight onto the air. All you sycophants, you. Yeah, I'm still pissed off about that email from Monday. Probably giving a great deal more satisfaction to the author than I ought, but I am. Because, frankly, when you put the time in that gets put in here, and then you have somebody say something like, you know, blustering downer or referring to the people who share their time with this program to listen to this program as sycophants, the people in their thousands. The odd thing about that weird little email was that it didn't have any specificity to it. Obviously, I had touched a nerve somewhere, but they didn't quite have the guts to discuss just which nerve got touched. Quick comment. Thanks for that story. I'm going to steal it from you. I guess tithing to the invisible critter isn't worth a damn. He sure don't tell his followers to smarten up. No, he doesn't. You know, look, that position on the so-called Jehovah God is nothing new. The first compiler of what would later become a Christian Bible was a guy named Marcion, and he held that the Old Testament God was sort of a demon. And the God that was Jesus' daddy in the New Testament was a little better at it. And a little better at being the God. You know, more competent or something. We're talking about second and third century minds who were baffled by wheelbarrows, okay? But, you know, we still give them the great weight of credibility. So, you know, steal away. No, there's a couple of stories out there that I wanted to make sure that I got to, that I'm going to right now, because that's the funny story. No, this is the not so funny story. This is another one of those blustering downer stories. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I don't have time for happy Paris Hilton stories on this program. And I don't ascribe to the anthem at the end of Monty Python's Life of Brian, where they're all hanging on the cross, going, "Always look on the bright side of life." No, sorry. There were a couple of screw-ins that went down inside the Supreme Court of the United States recently. One of them was a story that has gotten some considerable notice, well, to the extent that the professional media does considerable notice. It'll be featured tonight, I think, at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Anderson Cooper on Chicken Noodle News. And it is the story of Deborah Schenck. Deborah Schenck is a 52-year-old woman. She's a former employee of Walmart.
Almost 8 years ago, she was permanently brain damaged in an auto accident. Now, she had health insurance through, oddly enough, Walmart. And the health insurance paid her initial hospital bills. But obviously, the car wreck wasn't Walmart's fault. And she did pursue, via legal means, a recovery against the driver who caused her the harm. And she won. She didn't win a lot, comparatively speaking. She's going to have care for the rest of her life that the verdict did not cover. And here's the fun part of the story. Walmart sued Debbie Shank to take her recovery away from her, to pay Walmart's health care provider back for what it had laid out for her initial care. And this is not unusual. The term for what was done is called subrogation. S-U-B-R-O-G-A-T-I-O-N, subrogation. And it says in cases where your health care provider covers medical expenses for which you are ultimately compensated by a third party, that they have a right to recover their out-of-pocket costs, you know, because it wasn't their fault. But it all, most of those policies have language that says something like, fully and fairly compensated for injuries, or compensated if the person, or subrogation if the person is compensated beyond their actual damages, something like that. And the laws of different states will, you know, back that up. Not in this case, baby. Mm-mm. Daphne Moore is a Walmart spokeswoman. And you wonder how Daphne Moore looks at herself in the mirror every morning. She said, "It's a very sad case, and we understand that people have a very emotional and sympathetic reaction. But," she said, "the plan is obligated to act in the interest of the health benefits of its employees as a whole. So we have to screw Deborah Shank." The plan steps in after an accident and covers those medical expenses so our associates don't have to worry about them being covered.
Walmart sued Deborah Shank for $470,000.
Mrs. Shank had monies in a special trust set up specifically for her ongoing long-term care that her family cannot provide her. And there was $417,000 in that trust. And Walmart is taking it. They were rebuffed on every appellate level, the Shanks were. And this week, the Supreme Court of the United States of America, who has, I believe, chiseled into their walls the phrase equal justice under law, gave that equal justice to Walmart and told Debbie Shank to go to hell. This is America. This is the America that doesn't have universal health care. This is the America where Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are quibbling over each other's health care plans when the simplest answer in the world is to simply get H.R. 676, the Medicare for All Act, passed and take the profit motive out of health care considerations. Debbie Shank does not live with her family. Debbie Shank cannot live with her family. Debbie Shank needs too much care for her family to give. Debbie Shank is in a nursing home in Jackson, Missouri. When the last little bit of her money runs out, she may very well be moved onto a ward or have to share a room with someone with senile dementia who screams through the night. Debbie Shank did not have enough money in the first place from her car wreck award to give her the care she needed for the rest of her days. Now, Debbie Shank, when the money runs out, will have to rely on some form of government assistance, perhaps through something like SSI or state Medicaid. And Debbie Shank and her husband's home will be subject to seizure, once again to recoup the benefits paid by the federal government. It's amazing, the story that I'm reading, the account that I'm looking at, has a response on it. You know, this is the downside of blogging. It allows the hateful right-wing pigs of this country to shout down common sense and compassion. This is some pretty disingenuous reporting. I realize this is a blog, but still, it's written completely sympathetic to the defendant. One, person has auto accident. Two, Walmart pays for medical care per her coverage plan. Three, person collects damages in an injury suit meant to cover cost of health care Walmart already covered. Of course Walmart asked for the money back. There's no reason the victim should get paid twice for the same thing. If you think health care costs are high now, let people get paid twice for things and see how high they go. There's only one problem with that moron, and that is Debbie Shank was not paid twice for the same thing. She proved at her trial the cost of her ongoing health care. Her special needs brought about by the fact that that auto accident turned her brain into something not nearly as functional as it once was. And Walmart said to hell with her future. We want the money she has in the present, and how she gets by in the future is her problem and not ours. Hey, Walmart, where's Debbie Shank's pension? Where's Debbie Shank's disability benefits? Long-term and short-term, Walmart. Oh, what? You don't offer them, you sons of bitches? That's what I thought. No need to go away from the horn. You can probably find the Anderson Cooper segment on CNN.com at a later time. But if, in case you were looking for a real good reason never to put your face inside a Walmart again, here's another one. Really, could you walk inside a Walmart knowing that you were siding with that hateful, filthy, vile company against a brain-damaged woman? Could you do that? I can't. I won't. And I realize for some people it's tough. Because Wally World in many communities has driven away the rest of the businesses. So that if you need a power saw, you go to Wally World. If you need a new pair of jeans, you go to Wally World. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. You don't need the new jeans today. You can wait 2 days for UPS to deliver them, and you can order them online. Maybe you can even find them that are made in America instead of in some sweatshop in China like what you get at Wally World. You can maybe go to a local hardware store 25 miles away, and yeah, it costs you some gasoline, but you're keeping a member of your community going when you go to that local hardware store for that saw, or that drill bit, or that wiring, or screws, or ornamental plants, or seeds, or a barbecue grill. It is possible to stay the hell out of Wally World. Because, well, this is prayer meeting, so, yeah, you remember that line from Matthew? And for every one of those that you've not done it unto the least of these, you've also not done it unto me. Well, there's Debbie Shanks, and there's Debbie Shanks, and there's Debbie Shanks, and there's Debbie Shanks. This is not the only human being that has ever been raked over the coal and run roughshod on by Walmart Corporation of Bentonville, Arkansas. They've done it to thousands of human beings. And every time you set foot in Walmart, you make sure that they will indeed do it to yet another person. So, you know, obviously the choice is yours. But if we're progressive and if we are liberal, then we have certain values that we live by. And going to Wally World is a complete and total violation of all of those. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got? Hi, welcome to the program.
Am I on? I'm not sure if I'm on there, Bob.
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, Bob, this is Jim from Alabama. I had sent an email about a week ago when you had that clip where the Marine was throwing the dog over the cliffside there.
Right, yeah.
And had a little shih tzu that was in a state of shock over that. It was quite surprising. Bob, I wanted to call just to tell you you got a great show. It's extraordinary. The truth is sober. A lot of people, you know, can't quite deal with that. You know, everything that's been brought down on this country since the Republicans taken office, starting with Reagan, brought a state of despotism among us, you know, and to the point where you're, in my case, where your head almost hurts, you know, just thinking about it, you know?
Yeah.
Just anyway.
No, it's hard to stomach sometimes. And I wish, I don't know. Maybe there will come a day when I can come on and sing songs and play the banjo a little bit. Maybe we'll have video and I'll do a little bit of the old soft shoe too. Man, that'll be scary to behold.
I had that thought earlier today listening to your show yesterday on White Rose. That, you know, wouldn't it be nice to hear on the radio talking about, introducing vitamin A in the Southeast Asia or South America, and good stories, positive stories, things that we hoped as young people to grow up and realize,
Yeah.
And yet, here we talk. It's unbelievable the diversion that has occurred in this country, since the Republicans have taken power in the 80s. And they wonder, that if there's any right wingers out there listening, you wonder why we're so angry. You go back to when Clinton was elected in 92, the first day he took office, he had Hastert, a man who told his wife on the operating table that he was going to divorce her, that he's going to impeach Clinton. So the first day Clinton takes office was threatened with impeachment. And, from that point on, it was actually starting with Reagan. It's been nothing but divisiveness. And anger and hatred, and it's just ugly, Bob. It's just it's unbelievable.
Jim, it's vile. It's I call it the swamp, the bog, whatever, and it clings to you that way. It really does. And I had a caller off air. I guess it was last night after I'd gotten in from taking the kids to the dentist. She said, I look back at all of this and I say that it all started in 1980.
Yeah, 1980. Yeah.
And how can you can't argue with that. Ronald Reagan is the beginning of the end of American decency.
Well, you remember the first thing he did when he took office was took the solar panels off the White House that Carter had put there.
And the second thing he did was to tax a waitress's tips.
And then on and on. Well, he leveled the tax code and took, there was a time when the regular person could deduct dental bills, medical bills, things like that, and that's all gone now and was eliminated during the Reagan administration.
Yes, it was. And I well remember everything. It was within a couple of, within a year or two of him taking office that they went through and reevaluated thousands of Social Security cases, Social Security disability cases, and literally removed a guy, took away a guy's Social Security who was on an iron lung, Jim. That's the compassion of the Reagan administration. That's this saint that they hold up to us. Nancy Reagan came out and said, Ronnie and I always waited until everything was cleared away before we gave our endorsement. We're proud, I'm proud to endorse John McCain.
Yeah.
Dear God.
I'll tell you, Bob, it's so hard to explain. I've got a background in biochemistry, and I spend quite a bit of time in that area. And I have to come to the conclusion that it must be a genetic phenomenon, because the level of ignorance and illegalness, the things that are happening in Washington, it's beyond one's imagination how the country could embrace what's happening right now. It must be that half the population genetically defect in some way, and I just can't understand it otherwise,
I don't pretend to, Jim, and you're probably in a better position to do so than I, but people have been, this all has to flow as far as I can make any sense of it. And if you don't mind my asking, and I don't give away any secrets or anything, but what part of Alabama are you in?
Fayetteville.
Okay.
But I work under contract with Auburn University, so I do a lot of work for them.
Well, I'll give you a war eagle until they make it up to Morgantown to play my beloved Mountaineers in October.
Mountaineers, there's something else.
But it's fear-driven, and especially in the Deep South and in rural areas, there is no better way to get one's political way in this country, it would seem, than appeal to fears, whether it's whites' fears of blacks, or fear of communists, or fear of Mexicans or immigrants. I keep asking this question. Alabama does not have a border with Mexico. Neither does North Carolina or South Carolina or Georgia. And yet there has been an influx of immigrants into that area. That the only thing I can use to explain it is the right to work laws.
because the people, legislators, politicians, preying upon the fears of a dwindling middle class, convinced that middle class that for them to stand up for the right to fair wages would somehow cause their jobs to disappear, when in fact the opposite turned out to be true. And so every, you know, it seems to me, and look at it and get back with me and tell me if you disagree or agree, every one of these things that is so deleterious to the United States and her people begins with a campaign that is based on fear.
Yes, and fear has to trigger something, you know, very prehistoric, you know, within ourselves. And that's why I say the potential for the link to genetics may be there. Because you and I, Bob, and a lot of your listeners, and it's very straightforward. It's so clear. It's so transparent that what's happening in this country is just unbelievable. It's beyond the imagination, yet it's happening. And you may be right, based in fear, manipulated, you know, by subtle and pronounced propaganda that seems to be so prevalent in the mainstream media. And it just plays on a certain fraction of the population. And now, of course, the control of the media is a big player because they manipulate the message and this sort of thing. I tell you, Bob, it's just it's disheartening. I can only hope that, you know, someday we get back on track, we regain our senses, realize that, you know, the United States, you know, stands for good things. We should emulate courageousness, integrity, moral turpitude. You know, we should stand for all these things that are strong. And we find ourselves in the pits of hell, is the best way I can describe it.
And I'm just curious, you mentioned the media. What kind of coverage are you getting inside the territorial confines of Alabama about the Don Siegelman matter?
Not a thing. In fact, it was blacked out. That story the other day was blacked out. I tell you, Bob, I'm a stranger in a strange land, all right? It's a collective ignorance, okay? And these people are locked in to seeing things certain ways. For example, they were trying to pass a law last year where they're going to tax these chicken operations and pig operations a few extra bucks to help pay for the schools, since Alabama's number, 48 or 49 in the country. And yet the people rejected it, you know, and all it was a little bit more money from these corporations. So they're locked into this way of thinking, and you can't so much call it ignorance. It has to be something else, and that's why I lean towards genetics, because it's just like getting an offer in the mail that says you can win $5,000, you know, if you do this. Well, there's a certain fraction of people that will do that, okay? And that is genetically based, and of course a lot of things are, you know. And it must be, but this ability to drive by fear, control people by propaganda, manipulating, you know, the way they think, it's got to have a deep-rooted phenomenon, you know?
Yeah, it does. And perhaps our healing, our answer, lies in our ability to find those roots and pull them.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Bob, in the future, I follow a lot of biochemistry. There's a lot coming down the pike. In fact, the next generation, reading an article the other day, where they're making great progress in longevity, and so the next generation may see 100-plus years, and anyway, a lot of good things are coming. Now, part of what's coming will be the realization that homosexuality is a genetic phenomenon, and so on. So there will be genetic markers that may indicate that. I'm not trying to get over to an area where it starts getting, you know, sci-fi or anything.
No, I don't think you are. I mean, I think these are things that are just coming. My concern is that we use them for good.
Sure.
But you know what? As long as there, and this goes back to what I was saying about Debbie Shank's case in the health insurance business, as long as there are for-profit insurance companies out there, they will use it for evil.
We have people like Scalia, Alito, Roberts, Tom, as long as we have people like that. You know, there was a time, Bob, in the Supreme Court when only the greatest minds in jurisprudence were put on that court, you know? And for many, many years, that was the case. And the court was always political to a degree, but never, never like it is today. In fact, half of the people on the Supreme Court right now, according to the standards set by our founding fathers, would not even be close to being qualified to being on the Supreme Court. You know, they're there for political reasons. This is antithetical to the Constitution and what the framers argued. And we're just taking a wrong turn, and we've got to get back on track. And like you said, it's going to take a lot of work and a lot, you know, a lot of realization and waking up and that sort of thing.
And part of that is having the nerve to talk about it with neighbors and friends and whatever. What would happen if you said that in the grocery store in Op?
Oh, I tell you what, Bob, I take every opportunity. We are, as Democrats, we are duty-bound and obligated to bring this up in public. In fact, every time I get in public, I make sure when I'm in a cashier line that I say something to let these people know, because I know the Republicans standing behind me. So I make a statement, and I make it, you know, not uncomfortably loud, but loud enough where they can hear it, you know. And I will say something to get their attention and let them know there are a lot of pissed off people in this country based on what these Republicans are doing. So I, and then of course, friends and everything else. So every opportunity, I think, as Democrats, we need to speak up.
Does the Democratic Party have a chance in Alabama in November?
The Democratic Party, yeah, when hell freezes over.
Okay, I just, yeah, you know,
there's
just
no
checking.
Way
yeah.
In this state. No way. There's no way.
And so, you apply that equally regardless of who is the nominee?
Well, Obama will certainly carry the black vote, but, you got this collective mentality. They're locked in, you know. And I started to call it when Bush won the election in 2000. I saw him right away as fascist, man. You know, the right wing, they walk lockstep. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about the, you know, what the founding fathers said in the Federalist Papers or what this country stood for. Just like take like torture, for example, okay? This is absurdity, okay? This is not the United States. This is not America. We don't torture, you know? Yet here we got people tortured. And here's another thing, Bob. You talk about, like, religion, you know? I'm a deist, I guess, you know? But I look at these Christians, how in the hell can you support the slaughter of innocent people in Iraq and call yourself a Christian? This is beyond me, Bob.
It's beyond me, too, and the thing that blows me away is that you can point out to them and say that, you know, in Baghdad, before March of 2003, there was an open synagogue that Jews were free to go to. In Baghdad, before March of 2003, there was a vibrant, healthy Christian population. In fact, the guy that came on as Saddam's spokesman half the time, and you know, the fundies don't want to hear any of this, was a Christian. He was a Chaldean Christian. The Chaldean Archbishop of the Catholic Church was found blown away a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, Saddam's second in command was a Catholic, you know.
Yeah.
And something else across my mind earlier today, too, was, you know, before we occupied that country, Sunni and Shia lived in the same neighborhoods now. You know, I mean, together, they... And we look at, you know, I'll tell you what it was, Bob, is ethnic cleansing, man. We had to get in there and we had to separate these darn people and set the stage to take over this oil or whatever, you know, we're doing over there.
Well, did you catch the story? Chevron is now negotiating for Iraq's oil rights.
Yeah. Well, we knew that was what it was about to begin. Well, I'll tell you what I would recommend to your listeners. If you haven't seen Bush's War on the front line, it's on the Internet. And it's in two parts. The first part are the, you know, 5,000 lies that led up to the war. And the second part is all the screw-ups after the war started, you know. And so I recommend to your listeners to watch Bush's War put out by PBS Frontline. And it's very good, very factual.
Yeah, it's easy, and it's easy to find. I went looking for it. I caught the first couple of minutes this afternoon while I was playing hooky from doing show prep. And it's
excellent. And
it's
I recommend
stunning.
Any right-wingers listening in right now, you know, buckle up and watch it, okay? And I tell you, Bob, when we get back to the truth in this country and what this country stood for, and it's just like we won't go into the corporate raping of the economy or anything, but, you know, here's what I think about, Bob. I think about that 20-year-old who got shot in the neck on Normandy Beach and sat there and bled to death, and his last thought was of his mother. And I'll tell you something, Bob, he bled for all of us, okay? He didn't just bleed for the top 5%. He gave his life for the freedom that this country stands for, and he did it for all of us, just like that young lady that was getting raked over by Walmart. These young men and women who have given their lives, even including Iraq, that have given their lives for our freedoms, they did it for all of us. This, you know, it's just, I tell you, Bob, it's unbelievable what has happened to this country in the last 30 years. And a lot of these young people out there listening, they don't, that's all they know, okay? This hate and divisiveness.
You're so right. And I look back, and I feel sometimes a little bit like a dinosaur because, you know, I'm a 45-year-old man. But I actually have a memory of a time before Reagan.
Yes.
And of what it was to grow up in a middle-class household that was, you know, single wage earner and nobody on starvation. You can't have that in this country anymore. And there's a little statistic out there that is never, I feel like I'm one of the few people that ever cites it, but it's simple on its face and so complex in its depth. And that is that the Carter administration was the last time that a single wage earner family was the majority in this country. With the advent of Ronald Reagan, mama had to go to work. Now, I'm not being critical of working women, whether women work, don't work. That's entirely a matter of personal choice. When it's a matter of personal choice. But with the advent of Ronald Reagan, it was no longer a matter of choice. It became a matter of necessity.
Yeah, oh, sure, sure. It's going to get even worse as the value of the dollar drops. Bob, let me end by this, and I really, really appreciate you giving me a few minutes here. And I love you, Shell. You're very articulate, very intelligent. These people call in and say you're, like that young lady yesterday said, you're a little bit of a dry spot or something. Forget these people, man. The truth is very sober. This country is in a very sober condition right now. And we have to keep speaking the truth, okay? And let me just end by saying that, just say this. Okay, these polls that are coming out saying, you know, McCain's ahead by two, McCain's ahead by three. Bull honky, okay? There are more Democratic voters in this country than there are Republicans. All we have to do is get the hell out and vote and get these damn fascists out of office so we can get our country back before it's too late. And I'll end on that, and I'll tell you this, Bob, you got a wonderful show. Your intelligence is just impressive, and keep it up, and just keep on keeping on.
Well, bless your heart, and you've got a tough job ahead of you, because I tell you what, that's a hard fight to fight where you are, and I'm proud of you for fighting it.
Well, we'll all fight it together. Maybe we'll regain our country, Bob.
All right. Thanks a lot. You take care. Hope to hear from you again soon.
Okay. We'll drop in another time. Bye-bye.
And pet the puppy for me, please.
Oh, yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye. That, by God, is conversation radio. That's what it's supposed to be like. Hi, who have I got?
Bob, you've got Dave in California.
Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, like you, like many of your colleagues and listeners and the audience, I've been trying to put whatever thought I can into understanding what's happened, what's gone wrong at a core level, and I'll give it a try. You know, it's been my observation over a lot of years. There are people that care about other people. I think you're one of them. I'm one of them. If you see somebody suffering or hurting, you feel that with them, you know. And there is a group of people who I guess are basically sociopathic, that are exploitive, that only see other people as there to be used to benefit themselves. Fortunately, I think most of the time in this country, those people that cared had a real voice, not always. And that's so missing right now. A totally exploitive class of people have taken over power at state and federal levels all over the place. Many of them will benefit not at all from supporting the greediest of operators. I don't want to ramble here on you.
No, you're doing fine.
Okay, I believe those people who have it in their heart to care are vulnerable because a real operator, I call them I3 personality type, they, how do I use you? Can I charm you? Can I con you? Can I intimidate you? Can I seduce you? How do I get out of you what I want for me? And they tend to be dominant over another group of people that are basically, we have neurosis, guilt, we have fears that we aren't adequate to at all, that we don't quite measure up. And these are I3 personality types will come at us like a badger in your face. And they've done that. They have found ways to take complete control over the big corporate interests, and then the corporate interests taking control over our government right now.
Dave, did they take over the big corporate interests, or is this what the big corporate interests have been all along, and they finally felt comfortable pulling off the rubber mask?
Well, you know, I think that I wouldn't want to oversimplify it, because I'm sure there have been some successful big corporate people who cared about their employees, who didn't want to take their jobs away and send them to Brazil, who wanted to have them have good health care and be able to take vacations. There have been some employers like that. They are nowhere to be felt right now. They still exist, I suppose, but in a very small measure. And they will likely be eaten alive by those who see only how do I use your type. At a core to it all, I think most of what we've got in our government right now feels strong, unmet needs. They, early in their early development, something was lacking. Some, probably affection, self-esteem, something. And feeling that void, they are trying to fill it by stuffing everything that they can into their coffers, their banks, their profits.
It's a form of gluttony.
Yes. It's a form, you know, it's the basic personality of a shoplifter. They feel a void, and so they go through stores and take things they have absolutely no value for, but they're trying to fill a void emotionally by grabbing physical things to do it. And I think on a very grand scale, that's what we're seeing with Bush and Cheney and Condoleezza and that whole team. They're grabbing for everything because some unmet emotional need prevalent.
Well, but is there, I mean, and I'm not being a smartass, okay, Dave? I'm really, really not.
Mm-hmm.
We can't cure this with a hug, can we? I mean, at this point, they're so far deep into their pathology that they have to be stopped the way you'd stop a psycho.
I think they have to be stomped down and squashed like a bug, yes, I do believe that. I think that at this point, they have so deeply into their... There was a time when a hug would have gone an awful long way. But right now, they have done so much harm. And I think I believe they've done much more harm than even you and most of your colleagues. I believe that they planned their invasions in the Middle East for years. They're behind schedule, and they want so much to be in Iran and Syria now, but they had laid it out. They spelled it out in PNAC, you know, the global domination, the new world order, and it was shifting all the wealth of the world into this big, small Carlyle group.
Is it because somewhere in the furthest reaches of the halls of power that they know that the stuff's about to hit the fan, Dave? Is this grab it while you can? Is this eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die?
But I see a little bit of that. The more prevalent I see the arrogance of Cheney and Bush walking, flipping us the finger, saying, I don't give a damn what you people think.
Yeah, so... I can't believe even a man as hateful and evil as Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney would look straight at a camera when asked about 76% of the American people thinking the war isn't worth it. So, I mean, that's not the attitude of an elected representative of the people. That's the attitude of a Caesar, of a dictator, isn't it?
I think it is, but I think what I'm reading to it is that, to hell with you people. I don't care how you think. I don't care how you vote. We control the voting machine. That's why when I'm on the chat room, I usually choose end election fraud, because I do believe there is that arrogance that they say, even if we get down to 10% popularity, we can flip enough votes to preserve power.
And I'm sure you've read about what was done with the vote flipping in Alabama with Don Siegelman. I mean, it's happened all over the country. There's no doubt about that to me. But what scares me, Dave, is that they've gotten to a point, and I'm not trying to pee on anybody's Wheaties or anything, but I really, really don't want to say this. But there are some aspects of the Democratic candidates that I think that corporate America would be just as happy with as they would McCain.
Yes. And at every primary election, as I see it, because almost everybody I knew that was a Democrat, moderates to liberals, thought Kucinich is our best hope. He's going to give us the best health plan. He's going to get us out of the war. He's going to do best by labor. He will end NAFTA. He will afford equality of marriage. Whatever your issues were, everybody wanted Kucinich. So I think most of the people went in and voted for Kucinich. But they didn't want us to have Kucinich. That would be too frightful for them.
If that was provable, Dave, I don't know. We've proven Florida, and it didn't bring America down, bring down the monsters. You are well aware of the second law of thermodynamics, most likely, and the fact that all things proceed toward entropy. This is us running headlong at it, isn't it? To the point that we just have to grind it to a halt. This book that I've been talking about for weeks now, that I'm slowly getting through, Collapse by Jared Diamond, he's talking about that very thing, about societies that cannot find their way to common enough ground that they can solve their own problems, and how it has taken down culture after culture after culture after culture. And
I think I'm coming close in a way, because the nature of the caring, decent human being is that we don't want to be rude. We don't want to risk offending somebody. Even if we're dealing with somebody that's an up-in-their-face, rudeness type of person, we still try to tend to remain considerate. And that's doing us in.
I'm pretty much done with that. I don't do that anymore, Dave.
No, I know you don't, Bob, and I must say I appreciate that immensely. And I so much so as a guy in a lot of your network there, you are no longer too shy, but to grab him by the head and twist it.
You know, sometimes it's as little as just saying, you know, looking at somebody when they say something crazy and go, you know, you're a moron. And because I've written off a whole lot of America.
Yeah.
And I've recognized that if we're going to change this country, it's going to be change that's going to be brought about by considerably less than a stunning majority. Now, I mean, 76% of America is against the war now. But where the hell were they when it started, Dave? Where were they when people like you and me and the rest of the listeners to this network, where were they when we were standing alone and getting called morons?
Well, we were being deceived. You and I know that Cheney, Bush, that whole thing, lie after lie after lie, and people wanted to believe it, you know. Still to this day, a lot of people want to believe I am a part of a wonderful country. My government brings good to the world. We would never be out there exploiting and taking advantage of. We would not be invading. They want to believe that.
George Bush's statement the other day, marking the 4,000th fatality in Iraq of the American military. You know, I'm bothered by that in its own right, Dave, because it's not 4,000 dead in Iraq. It's 1,004,000.
That's correct.
But you know, we don't count those people. But when he said, My decision to remove Saddam was correct then, it's correct now, and it will always be correct. In other words, just telling history to piss off.
Yeah, the people of that.
And it wasn't correct then, it's not correct now, and it's never going to be correct, no matter how much after-the-fact ballyhooing they do.
Well, do we agree on this, that it was no legitimate, no honorable reason for those invasions? They came up with all kinds of lies. But reality is that it is extremely profitable to Exxon and to Bechtel and to Lockheed Martin and Halliburton.
Well, I can't help but notice that everything you've just mentioned, their share prices have gone through the roof since George Bush started this war. It would seem a priori that, you know, a priori, is it? It's empirical evidence that it was good for them.
Now, they still go on, and we're still hearing credible-sounding lies about Holocaust and victory and defeat for the United States would be terrible. We must, you know, our enemy is people that don't like having their country invaded, that are being labeled as insurgents and terrorists. And that's all lies, and that's what this group of psychopaths that run our government are all about. Lie and grab everything.
Get it, because the getting is good. Dave, thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you for being there, Bob, and thank you for your whole network.
Take care. Our good friend Dave in Northern California. Rolling onward. Hi, who have I got?
This is B-Rez.
Hey, B-Rez, what's up, brother?
Man, just listening to your show, wow. I agree with everything you say, but I've got a question for you.
All right.
And my question is, the comment that you didn't want to make earlier about the fact that some big business owners would be just as fine with the Democratic candidates as they will be with John McCain, what is the answer if both sides of the tract are foiled?
The answer is a profound change in the system.
What would bring apart that found change or that profound change?
One thing: public financing of campaigns. Now, if you want to go for the twofer, it's public financing of campaigns coupled with a return to paper ballots and paper ballots only. But the minute you get corporate money out of our election system is the minute that you start seeing a better quality of representative. Because see, right now, you could have the smartest guy in the world be, and he doesn't have. Jesus, I mean, you live in Raleigh County, okay? Do you know what it takes to run for House, just plain old garden variety, boring West Virginia House of Delegates in Raleigh County? Do you know how many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars you have to run for that?
Probably a ridiculous amount.
It is. The genius who lives down the street, who's smart as a whip and as honest as the day is long, but isn't independently wealthy and sucked up with a bunch of donors, that guy can't run. On the other hand, you get what's called a clean elections bill passed in West Virginia or any other state, and you're going to see different candidates come out because the system is publicly funded. And if you absolutely remove corporate money from the process, you will see a wholesale sea change, because then corporate America cannot buy candidates. You want to go for the threefer? Okay. Public financing of campaigns, a return to nothing but paper ballots, and a law in the Congress that says no member of Congress shall take so much as one thin penny from any outside interest. Every member of Congress shall subsist on their congressional salary and not a damn dime more.
Wow.
And put some teeth in that law and say, if we catch you doing it, it's going to be 40 years making little rocks out of big rocks at Leavenworth, and none of this club fed BS in Morgantown or Beckley or the Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama. You're going to do hard time, Congressman.
So how do we get there? Do we?
Demand it. Possible? Demand it.
How do you demand it? How do you demand
clean election? Clean elections is brought up in the West Virginia legislature every blessed session, and we get a little bit closer every session. Because every year, there's one more scandal. There's one more photograph of Spike Maynard hobnobbing with Don Blankenship on the French Riviera, okay?
Right.
Every one of those takes us a little bit closer. But, and I'm not gooning on you, you didn't know about this. You know about it now. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. And it has a lot to do with the public attitude as well. Because if we want to just sit around and bitch about government the way we sit around and talk about who's the ugliest idol star, nothing's going to change. But if we want real change, we will damned well demand it. We will, because, you know, like in a House of Delegates race or a West Virginia Senate race, you can go to the goober who's running for the office and say, listen, you want my vote, you get solidly behind clean elections. And if we put you in office and you don't do that, I will bust my ass until there ain't no ass left on me to get you thrown back the hell out of office. Do you understand me? It's
you know, it's what Dave was talking about a minute ago, where he said, you know, we still have this little urge to try to be, you know, polite. Bullshit on polite, B. It is time to start being in their face. I don't mean like, you know, flailing your fists or frothing or spitting or anything, but it's time to talk as plainly to them as we do to each other. You know, if you've got a buddy and he's too drunk to drive, do you mollycoddle him? You say, you know, dude, give me the damn keys, right?
Right, exactly.
We got to be as honest with our elected representatives as we are with ourselves.
Okay, well, tell me this. With the election we're faced with now, and we don't have a candidate that's really behind clean elections, or I'm not saying that there's a candidate that's not behind clean elections, because, of course, they would all say that they're all behind clean
elections. I've heard Hillary say it.
Do you think that she 100% means it?
You know, that's a matter of the human heart, because that's a matter of how much credibility you ascribe to her. I'm sure Barack Obama would say something similar.
I'm sure he would.
But, you know, the President of the United States does not pass legislation. The Congress does.
Right.
So, you know, primary coming up, you pick who you think is going to do the best job, and promise yourself that regardless of who wins the overall nomination, that you're going to support the nominee, because I guarantee you there is a difference between John McCain and those two people.
Oh, I know that. I know that. You don't have to worry about me.
No. I'm not. But I know you're talking to people who, you may be talking to people who say, well, you know, if it isn't so-and-so, well, I'm not going to vote in November. Or if it's not her, I'm not going to vote. You know, those people are incredibly short-sighted. Because what Jim was saying a few minutes ago, calling from Alabama, we've got a generation of people who have grown up with nothing but division. Who've grown up, who don't know a world that didn't have Reagan as a president. And my generation that does know that world is getting older. And if we hope to get anything done, you know, we got to sit down with your generation and have a nice chat and explain that America hasn't always been this way, that it doesn't have to be this way.
I think it has to be done by someone who can really reach the younger generation, and even farther younger. You know, I mean, I know I'm considered a young person, but like I said before, I'm not that much of a spring chicken anymore. At 25, you know, I'm not considered the young.
Yeah, but you ain't one foot in the banana and one foot in the grave. You know, no.
Well, you're right.
Let me back up. Let me back up. Screw waiting, and this is something that I say to other groups as well. Screw waiting for somebody else to save you. Save yourself. Get out there. Run. So what if you get stomped? Run. Because, you know, you'll have a right to speak at candidate forums. Run for House of Delegates. Run for City Council. Run for Mayor. Run for something. Run for Democratic Executive Committee. Run for something and talk about it and make them engage in the dialogue.
It doesn't matter if you lose or win, just the fact that you got to say your piece.
It means you're adding to the dialogue, doesn't it?
Yes.
And if you start doing that, and you can, and things will begin to change. But, and you know, there are resources that you know how to use that I don't know how to use, that you and I have talked about off air, you know. The horn getting better at using things like MySpace, social networking, that kind of stuff.
Right.
This is stuff that, for the most part, my generation and up is not nearly as savvy at as yours is. If you can motivate a bunch of 18-year-olds to get out and vote, you might, and I'm not talking necessarily about you, but you might just find yourself going to the West Virginia House of Delegates.
Well, that brings up my next question. My next question would be, is basically you're saying you have to have so many millions of dollars to run for president or run for really any office. You have to have a lot of money. And I'm wondering, do you think that someone could get elected office through social networking alone?
It's entirely possible.
I think so.
If you motivate the people who are on those sites. Now there's no bear in mind there is no substitute for getting out and knocking on doors and kissing hands and shaking babies.
Kissing hands and shaking babies.
I mean, you know, you got to go to the Bean and Ramp dinners, brother. You just have to.
Right.
But to utilize those tools, damn straight and cheap. Oh my God, yeah, that's a way of circumventing the money.
Right.
So, you know, chew on that a little bit.
Something to think about, it really is.
It sure is.
Definitely something to think about.
B, I've got a bunch of stuff blinking here, but, man, I'm glad you called.
Well, I understand completely. And if you could please give me a call back off air tonight, I would love to talk with you more.
It may not be tonight because I've got another dentist appointment to get the kids to in the morning, and I'm going to run for the bed the minute that the programming's over. But, yeah, there's every possibility.
Well, even if you could give me just 5 minutes, I just want to tell you something. So please just give me a call if you can.
All right, I will. Take care, B.
All right, bye-bye.
Later.
You too.
That's horn announcer Brian Reznor. And rolling on. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, horn listeners. I'm David, and I'm a Bob Suck-up-a-fant. Please, Bob, take down your pants. I need to kiss your ass right up to the hub.
Ooh.
That is my everything.
I ain't gonna, and you can't make me.
Oh, thank the flying spaghetti monster for his blessed intervention into my idiocy. How you doing, boss?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. Some great conversations tonight.
Sounded like you're rocking right along.
Yeah, I hated not being here last night, and so I guess, you know, maybe that gives me a little bit of added vim and vigor and an extra dose of blusterous downerism.
Oh, bordering on that wonderful comic that you and I both love that, you know, spoke about doing without made for wax darts later in the month?
Exactly.
All right, that's a little inside. We won't go any further into that. Mostly, I cannot get over the arrogance of all these Republicans. This 5D dick. So, you know, Bush saying it was a great idea. Karl Rove spouting stuff on his, you know, his own private network. Never mind your own private Idaho. Carl's got his own private network now. Good Lord.
Oh, and the other thing that Cheney said that just sort of, you know, like walking through a spider web in the dark, that of course the president bears the greatest burden of these losses.
Oh yeah, I do tears.
Does that crap just make your eyes cross?
Yeah. The president does tears. This the issue of the woman whose beautiful mind can't be clouded with flag draped coffin. This the guy that couldn't bother to going to essentially drill formation in Alabama, you know, when others were dying, men that I knew, men that I cared about were dying. George couldn't be bothered. Oh, and Cheney's famous statement, it didn't fit in with my plan. That wasn't what I had in mind for myself. And these are the guys that are saying, oh yeah, the president's got a great big burden. Sure, he's doing this absolutely upside-down, vast, awkward moonwalk on the steps of the White House while he waits for McCain to show up. You know, about 4 months ago, he became that senior in high school that had all his credits, but it was January. He knew Pelosi had rolled over. He knew Reed had no real equipment or willingness to use it, and he just knew that he had done it. Once George Bush moved from November of last year to about January the 15th of this year, he knew he had a one. You know, it's Ferris Bueller's Wonderful Vacation. It's George W.'s Wonderful Vacation. He knew he had a year to just do anything he felt like. He could, you know, it didn't matter. He could
America.
Which he has, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah, repeatedly. But he was going to do it and laugh about it now because he had made it to the point where he knew he would never be impeached. He knew he had made it to the point where he and his spinmeisters could say, the surge has done it all. If anything goes sideways, it's because the Democrat Party, quoting those bastards, it's because the other guys didn't do what we did, and they messed it up. We handed them a thing on the upswing. You know, he just knew, and he is absolutely, yeah, I heard somebody say the other night, how could this man be so happy? Why is there any logical, reasonable reason under the big blue sky for the man to be happy? There are none. There is none. There can't be any. But he is.
I know. And, you know, you just hauled out Ferris Bueller a couple of minutes ago, and this thing happened inside my skull, David. Ben Stein standing there in front of the blackboard saying, W. And you know, really, that's where we are.
And just for a second, Ben Stein just did a column, I think for the New York Times, where he said everything's really not that bad. Don't worry about it. So how about that loop being really unusually tight?
Well, by the time you string that one together with the Pat Buchanan column.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah.
I'm still reeling from that, David. I mean, I know it's Pat Buchanan, and I know he's, you know, Pat Buchanan is who Pat Buchanan is who Pat Buchanan is. But when you see it sitting there in front of your face, you know, we brought you the salvation of Jesus Christ.
That one hit me harder than the thing that connected more directly with me hitting it lucky by saying a week or, you know, a few days back, you know, black folks didn't get here as tourists. Yet, Pat wants to say it's a bonus that they didn't get here as tourists. And I think it was Eugene Fenerman, a man that I respect greatly, happened to remind us that of the 600,000 that got here, 400,000 went over the gunnels because they died on the way. Could we just give that a little bit? And then Pat doing it, oh, that Buchanan, oh, my Lord. Doing that crap, and I'm sorry.
Oh, but it's going to get worse, and you know this is. And I'm not being snarky here. I'm not being snarky here, but I suspect, and I've seen evidence that there is a segment out there who believes that the Republicans will be nicer to Obama than they would have been to Hillary. And there is a wake up call a coming, and I've got evidence of it right here in front of me, David.
Oxymoron, Republican knife. It doesn't exist.
Subject line of right-wing email.
Yes.
Revealed. Obama's dad, polygamist, alcoholic. The Republicans are going after the dead.
And by virtue of speaking some sort of crap about Obama's father, a man that fathered him and took himself out of that relationship when Obama was, what, 3, 4, maybe? That has an influence on what he's about now? First of all, and Lord knows you and I will involve ourselves in the 12-ounce curl, or the ounce and a half of the finger branch curl, one or the other. I'm sorry, if we take the alcoholics out of politics, there's a whole bunch of people that did a whole bunch of great stuff for our nation are out the window. And claiming he was a polygamist? Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, well, just listen to this. Just listen to this poison. And you know, this, by the way, this article comes from the same guy who invented the Swift Boat Veterans, okay?
Oh, golly, big surprise.
In his autobiographical book, Dreams from My Father, Barack Obama paints a heroic picture of his father as having emerged from a poor Kenyan village where he was nothing more than a simple goat herder, to become a Harvard-educated economist destined to return to Africa to fulfill his promise. Unfortunately, the reality is much bleaker than the tale Obama tells in his book. In truth, Barack Obama Sr., Obama's father, was a polygamist who had already abandoned one wife and child in Africa when he met Obama's mother in Hawaii. After being educated at Harvard, Obama Sr. returned to Africa, abandoning Obama and his mother to live the life of a chronic alcoholic who ultimately killed himself in his second drink-induced car accident while driving drunk on the streets of Nairobi.
Utterly disgusting.
Oh, but you know, Ginsu commercial.
Taking on its... Taking
but wait, there's more.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, I've got enough Ginsu knives.
Barack Obama's father was also not really black.
Excuse me, there was a lot of background noise. I thought you said that Barack Obama's father was not actually black.
He was an Arab.
Oh, jeez. Oh, now we're going to play the Othello card, are we? Oh, what? The great black ram and the white U routine? Give me a break.
It's there, and it's coming. And I just got handed a statistic in the chat room. 20% of Obama and Hillary voters say that they are open to voting for McCain.
I went ballistic.
Now, I guess I really am being a downer now.
Oh, geez. I went ballistic on your airwaves 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I don't care. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say I don't care. I do care that if these various things may or may not be true, and it just pains me to no end to think that 20% of the Democratic Party would say something that stupid and that patently ignorant. 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, there is no other fact that should be considered other than, okay, fine, Hillary Obama, corporatist, okay, gee whiz, they're not pushing toward some reasonable funding for elections, okay, but wait a second, either Hillary or Obama, either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama can prevent the installation of another Alito. Please, for the love of everything that might be holy, all the way from the spaghetti monster to the Dalai Lama, guys, get it out of your ass and realize one more Supreme Court justice appointed by somebody like McCain, and it's 1820 for the next 120 years. Please. Bob, am I wrong?
No, I don't know. I think you might be a little conservative on your estimate. It might be the next 200 years.
Okay, well, geez.
I mean, like I said, we're still getting over Justice Taney's Dred Scott decision now, aren't we? And that was 18 when?
Oh, yes, we are.
And we're not over it either.
No, we're not. And if anybody thinks we are, specifically that goofball Buchanan, oh, Lord.
It's a brutal time, and it's going to stay brutal. It's going to stay brutal for a while. And anybody who thinks that, you know, just because the band plays Happy Days Are Here Again on January 20th, 2009, if by some miracle we managed to actually inaugurate Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, has got the world on upside down. We're talking about hard work here, and anybody that don't want to do it might best stay out of the way.
It's hard work, and it's going to be armor-plated underwear. Everybody is going to be on complete and full alert. I remember saying once a long, long time ago, a little over, close to 2 years, after the 2006 election, you said it, Wayne said it, I said it, now the hard work really began. Gee whiz, this election doesn't solve the problem. It's going to be hard work squared in latter January 2009, because if we just think the hate speech, guys, the ugliness is out there now, wait till, please God, let it happen. Our side be in power, and oh, please, let us vote in enough Democrats that are actually fully functional, real Democrats. You know, Bob, you and I, we would rather see the Congress and the Senate loaded with Steve Earle Marxists, but we, sadly, we won't get that.
Or at least Steve Cohen.
Cha-ching, we have a winner. Bob, you've got another toaster, and this one can handle three slices.
Hot damn toast for everybody.
Time for another caller. I got to go.
All right, take it easy.
Step up with the rest of the show, and thanks for being there.
Yeah, a little bit of branch water for me, if you don't mind.
I can handle that, you know, and there may be tomatoes in the summertime. You never can tell.
Gives me the chills just thinking about, tomatoes. Oh, mother.
Bye now.
Bye. Our buddy David in Middle Tennessee, a man working on a very small garden plot. I've seen photos. Hi, who have I got?
Sycophant number 13 reporting for duty, sir.
Jesus.
We can't help it. We just enjoy that. You know, it's one of those things. That I understand it got under your skin, but you know what I mean? It's like, say, compare it to some of the right-wing shows. Oh, Lordy, baby. Dear Lord, they goose step, you know.
Yeah, and the first time I ever get a ditto, I'm just going to turn the music on and go away for a while.
Well, let me bring up a couple of things sort of off-topic that some people aren't paying attention to because we're all watching the horse race and everything.
Yeah.
Is the thing that's coming up. Well, see, now, next, I believe it is next week or the week after. I'm not sure which. It's hard to tell reading this. That dear old General Petraeus comes back up to the hill. Him and, I believe, the Ambassador Crocker.
Yeah, and sort of gave George his little pass to January 2009, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the fun part of it is now that apparently, guess what? That little thing that's really been keeping the lid on over in Iran, some fellow named Sadr, has finally said, you know what, I'm tired of y'all picking us off one or two at a time. I'm telling my boys now they can shoot back.
And so you've got the Iraqi forces, sorry, I can't say that without giggling, fighting Sadr's forces. But, interestingly enough, Luke, it's still not a civil war.
Oh, no. And the thing is, they don't tell you about the fact that, you know what, Sadr's got almost more men than we do.
Yeah, and it's,
when he puts it together, it's about 200,000.
Well, and don't you think that it's only because we are paying a boatload of protection?
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, we keep saying, "Hey, where'd the $9 billion go?" I know where the $9 billion went, and it wasn't down the side of the sofa at the Coalition Provisional Authority.
No.
That crap was squirreled away and paid out as protection money.
Well, and you know what? The other thing is that they're not talking about on this is the thing that's really pissed off the fodder people is. You know, they're looking to next year when the vote comes around, and next year they ain't going to lay out of the vote. And when they get their chance to vote, there's a good chance that Mr. Sadr may be in charge of the country. But isn't it amazing, though, how apparently the last 6 months, which no one's barely been telling us, that apparently the U.S. forces, along with Mr. Maliki's, have been picking off a whole bunch of Sadr's people.
Yeah, just...
Guess why?
Yeah. Oh, look, this is... It's such a dummied-up, ginned-up, rubed-up, faked-up...
I know. Well, did you read the thing...
I mean, who looks at this stuff and actually believes it anymore?
I know. Well, the thing of it is... Now, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed watching the Frontline thing the last two nights, and it was very informative, but I agree with Ray McGovern's piece over in Common Dreams. Too little, too late. You know, this thing should have been... this. You know, they should have been having this story 3 years ago.
And you can't help but ask that question, Luke.
Yeah.
And that's not to diminish by any, but like you say, to diminish what they've done. But this is a brilliant expose of the inside of the barn once the horses are gone.
Well, you know, and he talks about, he says, isn't it amazing how in the story, that amazingly enough, and he doesn't blame, you know, the fellow that did it. Please don't get it wrong. I'm not complaining a whole lot on that part of it. But he said, isn't it amazing how there was not a whole lot of mention of our media's wonderful cooperation with the Bush regime? You know, they said, well, these things were done. It's like, wait a minute. He said, you know, he's essentially saying, yeah, and it was done with the Bush regime telling the press what to do, and the press is going, yes, sir, yes, sir. What story do you want us to tell them now?
Well, you mentioned Ray McGovern. In about a little over a month, I'll be having a chat with him.
Oh, good.
Ray is going to be down at the Seneca 2 lecture series on the campus of West Virginia State University, where I've gone to do remote stuff in the past. That's where we ran into Scott Ritter? Yeah, Scott Ritter. And I'll be down there again on April the 30th for a lecture from Ray McGovern. I'm really excited. I get these wonderful invitations from Seneca too, and they're great, great people, and they love to have me broadcast the events. And so we'll be doing that. Then dig this: on July 22nd, David K. Johnston.
Ooh. Well, I tell you what, I've got a couple questions that I may write them to you later, but let me go ahead and tell you real quick. If you get a chance, now, like I say, I don't know who you're going to be seeing in the next month or so with, you know, the primaries coming up. I'm sure you're going to have all the candidates, you know, coming back and forth, you know, since, you know, visiting and saying hi to the people of West Virginia. And I know you probably won't know until right before it happens when you're going to get a chance to maybe go see somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But my question, I have a couple questions, you know, if I had for my backup questions, you know, sort of, if I ever had the chance to ask. My first question would be to either candidate: are you going to tell your Justice Department on the day after you're elected to go after every person involved in the war crimes, and are you going to tell them not to let anybody off the hook? Yeah, I mean, or are you going to give
them a pass? Do we dare ask that question, Luke?
But that's something I want to know before somebody's elected. You know, and it's like the thing that you were talking about a couple of days ago, the thing with who was it? Talk about the impeachment thing. You know, said impeachment will keep them from going into Iran. It said, well, if they were impeached now, it'll stop them from going into Iran. You know, it's just like, say, I want somebody to answer that question. Are you going to tell your Justice Department to actively pursue these people? You know, I mean, when we find something.
Yeah, I want that question. I want that question answered about Don Siegelman too.
Oh yeah, or you know, or I want somebody to answer me a question. Are you going to tell whoever it would be, you know, whoever you assigned to, whoever you I guess you say assigned to the FCC or FEMA, are you going to remind them or tell them that, remember, you serve the people first. Corporations are about second or third on your list. That you are there to serve the public. And corporations don't make up the public. You know, when the FCC makes a decision, I want it to be something that's, you know, it's supposed to be helping the people, not helping the corporations.
Right, because the FCC regulates the people's airwaves.
Mm-hmm. It's not the corporations' airwaves. They don't own them. They get to rent them for a little while, but they do not own them.
Well, hence the recent auction of that particular chunk of bandwidth.
Well, that, and then also we just had the thing here where the Justice Department finally signed off on the thing with XM and Sirius.
Yeah, I got real misgivings about that.
I'm 6 1/2 half dozen the other on it. It's sort of like, I hate just having one, but at the same time, I'm wondering if the way they're talking, if either one of them could survive by themselves.
Well, I think they've proven that they can't. The other day when it was cleared, XM was trading at about $13 a share, and Sirius was trading at about $3.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, what they've got, I mean, one side's got Major League Baseball, the other side's got the NFL.
Yeah.
I'll say it's
just one of them things where maybe someday they'll figure it out, or, you know, or they'll have real live competition, but I'm beginning to wonder if that's the only way they can survive for the next 5 or 10 years.
Well, I'll tell you a little secret. I think in the end, satellite radio dies.
Oh, all of it. I think what you're going to end up having is this, what's this new stuff now where it's on the sideband?
Well, there's that, but there's what we're doing right here, too.
And the more that
wireless internet coverage expands across the United States, the less reason people have to subscribe to something like an XM or a Sirius.
I agree. I think, like you say, I think in the end, it's going to be something that may not last for 15 or 20 years. But up until that point where you can wear your headphones and tune into your internet, into internet radio, which, you know, we wish we could do. I wish I had a, you know, thing where I could either just put a disc in or a flash card or whatever.
Well, I mean, that stuff does exist, Luke.
I know, but you know what I mean.
But you may not have it there in East Tennessee yet, no. But yeah.
I mean, when it gets down to that point, I'd like it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, our buddy Alan, when he was doing long haul trucking, he had a card that slipped into his power book, and you know, went down the highway listening to the internet.
I'm just wondering if one day that's what you'll have. Essentially, will be the same thing as now having your AM/FM.
I'm certain of
radio
it.
Radio on your shoulder.
Look at what Nokia is already doing.
They're listing
internet radio on their phones, for heaven's sakes.
Well, you know how it is. It's now where you've got the XM thing where you can put it now on a boom box or like that. I think that's what you'll eventually have with internet radio, where you'll put it onto a, you know, like you'll have a place like on a boom box or something where you'll have a slot where you'll slip it in and it'll run through the speaker system like on a boom box or even on a headset radio. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how that winds up. You know, that's, you know.
Yeah, it's a ways down the road for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Blu-ray versus a high def, you know. It's like, say, of course, all of us, like say, I picked the Commodore when I was young. You know how it is, so.
my best friend had a Betamax. And you know what? It was better than VHS by a long shot.
Oh,
but,
sure. Yeah. But, you know, that's the way life winds up. Well, how's the bracket going? Are you enjoying where you're at?
I'm liking where I'm at, but I'm bleeding pretty hard on the rest of it.
Well, don't look at us. We're waiting to see how we play against Louisville. Then if we luck up and win that,
God, I want you.
We're going to play North Carolina.
I want you guys to beat Rick Pitino so bad I can taste it. I like Bruce Pearl about 1,000.
Yeah. We'll cool them off and heat us up.
Yeah, well, I mean, they looked like a machine to a certain extent this last round.
Well, I think I'm hoping 3 or 4 days off will kind of get them out of rhythm.
Yeah, and maybe getting it looked like if you got in their face a little bit that they got a little rattled too.
And that's the good thing about us, because I tell you what, they got 10 guys that love to get in faces.
Yeah, you got some guard issues, but I think Bruce will overcome those.
But there you know how that goes. But what was the other thing? How did you enjoy the Gene Lyons piece?
Oh, I read that early this morning, and you know Gene's pretty solid. And you're right. I mean, he's never going to show. And for those who don't know, he writes for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And
but he sees things clearer than most people.
Yeah, he does, and that's why to answer your question, he does not show up on the talking head shows.
I know. It's like we said before, isn't it amazing though how when it was like Huckabee, when you could have gone down there and had Gene Lyons who could have given you every, you know, book and verse on Mike Huckabee, you don't go to the local people. Shoot, they might know what they're talking about. You know, it's like I said, you know, when they started talking about Obama, my question is, why weren't you talking to Eric Zorn? You know, why weren't you talking to some of the people in Chicago?
Because those people are a threat to the chattering class.
Well, you know, it's like I said, the biggest problem you have is they won't do the thing on MSNBC where, you know, half of it's just setting up for, you know, Chris Matthews wants somebody in there just to set him up for his next rant. And somebody like Gene Lyons ain't going to play the fool for him.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he plays fool for anybody.
I know. One other thing, my off-topic subject today, I was sad to hear that.
Oh, Richard Widmark?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Richard Widmark passed away, what, 92?
93, I think.
Yeah.
92 or 93.
But
you know what I mean? We're getting to that age now where all of our classic heroes and people are starting to pass. And, you know, it just...
You know, I don't like Mel Gibson movies, but he turned in a great performance in that movie a few years ago. What was it, Revenge or Retribution?
Oh, yeah, I know which one you mean, where he played sort of the black ops...
Yeah, and he looked at it, and it became a household line here at the mansion. He just looks at Mel Gibson and says, "You're just mean," and did it so very, very well.
Or was it, wait, or was that James Coburn? No, that was James Coburn, not Richard Woodman.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry, wrong hero.
Oh, you're thinking, oh, Porter. Oh, God. Where the guy's holding the suitcases.
Yeah, you're just mean. Yeah, but yeah, Richard Widmark, didn't he play Colonel Travis in the Alamo?
Yes. No, he played Bowie.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, right, because, yeah. Yeah, he did play Jim Bowie.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's just one of those people that, you know, sometimes pass and you notice it and you don't notice it, and you just sometimes just have to sit back and hopefully, like, say, TCM or Turk, you know, either Turner or AMC, maybe in the next few days they'll do a retrospective or something on some of his stuff. Because some of his stuff was stuff that, you know, was like the 50s that you don't see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, well, let me let you go on, but it's bottom of the hour, so I know you got more people stacked up.
All right.
So you have a good day, and I'll talk at you somewhere down the road.
All right.
Hopefully Friday or Saturday we'll both be happy people.
Oh, yeah. I want to beat Xavier real bad. And I know Bob Huggins does, too, because he don't like them at all. Unfortunately, he's what, 8-8 against him, I think. Or
well, I say, you know, you never know how it is this time around. Like I say, it's to the point now where it's getting down to you're not sure who's going to win and how they're going to win.
Well, the beauty of the thing against Duke with West Virginia was the fact that you had people stepping up, and when you see people who don't have the season long reputation who all of a sudden decide to come and play real hard. It's inspiring because, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens at tournament time.
And like I say, you never know when it's going to start. Like, say, you know, some people, like I say, with 3-4 days off, cool off. Some people find a reason it's time to turn it on. So we'll just wait and see, you know, who shows up.
Exactly.
We'll just hope the right people show up.
Yeah, and, you know, wouldn't it be sweet if, and I hate to say, well, I'm probably pissing some people off because, you know, we got some Southern California listeners, but I got to say this. Wouldn't it be sweet if Western Kentucky would knock off UCLA?
Well, you know, it's
now, I know I need to be drugged for even thinking that could happen, but still.
Well, they could be the Cinderella team. You know how it is, so.
Well, at this point, they are.
I know. But like I say, the same thing with them. You know, if they show up and they play, they could do it. Because if they show up, they could play the other night.
Oh, you're darn right. You're darn right. And UCLA, you know. Got a scare put on them by Texas A&M, so.
We'll just wait and see.
All right,
take it easy, buddy.
Later, Luke.
See ya.
Bye. That's our evening sports report. Don't worry. Okay, the rest of you who hate sports of all forms can now turn the speakers back up. I did it again. I am a faithless fan because I always watch the Mountaineers through, you know, two sets of hands and, you know, one set of, you know, sort of, you know, a crack between my fingers. But I sat there at the workbench with my arm up, in up to my elbows in a computer working on stuff. And couldn't believe what I, you know, watched the first half and the Mountaineers just looked awful. And then they came back and just wore Duke out. God, it was sweet. So, yeah, but and I do have one other participant in the bracket battle with me, and I think at this point there are two people. Maybe it was the Yahoo game, I forget which one, but one of those bracket battles out there that has three, you know, 250,000 people in it. Two people have the Sweet 16 entirely correct. So, you know, tells you something. I think the best I ever did was to get into the top 45%, and that was years ago. Nothing but dumb luck. But, you know, who had Western Kentucky? Jeez. But, that, you know, so it's fun, and I'm looking forward to it this weekend. And it'll be fun to watch. You know, I just enjoy the NCAA tournament. Speaking of sports, real quick-like. See the story about the proposed settlement for the families of the Virginia Tech massacre? A bunch of the families were completely locked out of the negotiations because the negotiations were carried on by a law firm that did not represent them. And the families are being told that everybody, every family, has to accept a payout of $100,000 apiece and shut the hell up. So, now there are about 20 families, so that's six... $6.4 million. Math time. In essence, Virginia Tech is offering 20 families what it pays its head football coach in 3 years as compensation for the needless slaughter of their sons, daughters, wives, and husbands. You know, I don't think I'd leap at that $100,000 either. Because among the, out of all things, you know, and let this story stand as a sort of a symbol. Virginia has a fairly decent Democratic governor, Tim Kaine. And he said on Tuesday that the deal had been in the works for several months, but that relatives of some of the victims complained that the state negotiated only with the attorneys in Washington. So I don't care if they've been in the works for a year or if they stay in the works for 10 years. Until Virginia Tech and the state of Virginia get serious about handguns, I wouldn't settle either. Don't blame them at all. Especially when you compare what is being offered to what is brought in to that school by nothing more than college football. Dig that. Virginia Tech is offering in blood money and hush money no more than the equivalent of 3 years' salary of their football coach. Certainly offering far less than what their annual budget is for their football team. That's kind of gross, isn't it? That's sort of sickening. Legal sources familiar with the negotiations who spoke to NBC affiliate WRC-TV of Washington on condition of anonymity confirmed that other attorneys were not consulted in the settlement negotiations. Bode Grenier, the Washington law firm that negotiated the settlement, were the only ones involved. Aaron Peterson was killed in the attack on April 16th of last year. She said the settlement didn't meet her main objective, accountability for administrators. She said there's nobody who's even attempting to offer an apology, nobody who has been asked to step down. It's like, okay, let's hurry up and dismiss this and get on with business as usual. Poor Ms. Peterson. Poor Ms. Peterson. Poor Aaron Peterson. They just don't understand. It is business as usual. Because business as usual in the United States is that the gun lobby and the gun industry gets its way. And the deal that we have made with the devil will persist. And we will sacrifice our young, our old, our precious, under the rubric of providing constitutional freedom to companies that make products that are designed solely for the killing of other human beings. Nothing to scream about. Nothing to carry on about. Nothing to raise hell about. Just another day in America. Another day in gun-crazy America. Oh well, so it goes, as Kurt Vonnegut would say. Speaking of shooting, by the way, guarantee you, somewhere in America, this has been one of those kicker stories at the end of the night. Headline: man shooting hole through wall kills wife. Yeah, really. Guy was trying to hook up his DirecTV system out in deep water, Missouri. and he couldn't get a hole punched through the wall. As a consequence of which, he went and got the family .22 caliber handgun and tried to shoot a hole in the wall. Here's where it gets really, really pathetic. The second shot killed his wife. The first shot didn't do the trick, so he decided to do it again. He thought everybody was inside the house. He was under the impression that everybody was inside the residence, that he knew where everybody was at, said Sheriff's Department spokesman Major Robert Hills. No decision yet on pressing charges. Phew. Do we have a decision yet on letting this guy have a gun? Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Well, this is probably sycophant number 17 today. Good afternoon, Bob.
Well, good evening, Kate.
those other guys stole my thunder. I was going to be sycophant number one, but anyway.
I don't know what makes you guys such sickos.
I can't even spell the word. I don't even know what I'm talking. I'm just mimicking David and Luke. I don't know what this is.
Well, let's put it this way: if you put a P in front of it, sycophant.
Okie dokie. Yeah, that'd be me. I want to keep this brief so we can get the other. Never mind. Get the rest of the folks in on the line.
Oh, there's only 19 minutes left. Lighten up. Take your time. Except for your minutes.
I'm not going to spend no 19 minutes beating up on this issue. I went to the webpage today and saw that we are only at 60% and it's something like the 20 something of March. And so.
Yeah, we got 5 days of March left.
Ooh. Oh, that.
We've got five days to do something on the order of $600-700.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to remind all of your adoring fans and all the suck-ups and all the good callers and all the intellects today who called in to please send some money. Just send some money. We got to keep this going. Please.
I really want to. And I don't know. You know, I got to thinking, Kate, I don't know. I'm running out of ways to make it clear how we make this goes.
Yeah, me too. And I can already feel people rolling their eyes. Oh God, there's that bitch again, just doing that.
No, but
God Almighty, Kate, shut up.
I want to put it this way. We have a limited amount of cash that comes in. That's ours.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Agnes's.
I know that limited. That's heavy on the limited, huh?
And when we don't meet our monthly,
mm-hmm.
that goes in the pot too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what keep you know that's how even though we operate in the red, we keep going.
Right. Right. And when we get down to the wire, my little. Limited thing. When we get down to the wire, I just panic and send in what's left over here too. So it's getting old, folks. It's getting old. Please, $600. How hard can that be? We've had people calling in from all over the country tonight. Please send some money. Please send some money so we can keep the mics hot. Otherwise, we're going to lose this forum. And you and Luke were talking about Sirius and the other one going down. That'd be too bad because frequently when I'm out on the road, well, I can listen to the computer if I park because my truck is too noisy. But I don't want to put headphones on and try to drive too because I think that's illegal. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't want to find out the hard way.
I don't know. I was told when I got my CDL that it was. Illegal to drive barefoot too, and I said, "Well, screw you! That's how I drive." So how you feel the engine.
You know, I was raised being told that it was illegal to drive barefoot too. Never understood why.
Well, I don't remember if I got around. God, that was eons ago. I don't remember if I ever got around to going to the highway patrol or DMV or somebody to ask. I think I did ask somebody at DMV and they said yes, it was illegal. But I never could find it in the driver's manual, and I never bothered looking up in the state code in Washington. So, I still drive barefoot, so whatever. But anyway, I've got my broadband card, and I can hear the horn whenever I want to if I pull over and park in a rest area or something. But unless it's in Texas where Verizon is on roaming charges, oh God. Anyway,
that's a whole lot of land for roaming in. Talk about your don't fence me in.
Right. So if it weren't for satellite radio, when I'm out on the road,
that's why Luke said, you know, six, you know, kind of half and half, and I said I'm mixed emotions on it too.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that was being said was that, you know, it would forestall a bankruptcy. And given the fact that XM was trading at 13 and Sirius was trading at 3, I'm guessing it was Sirius that was headed for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
I don't want them gone either.
No.
But if you consider how energy intensive it is to get all of those programs from all over creation, centralize it, send it up on a bird to a satellite and bounce it back down to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be costly.
Well, yeah. Well, and my subscription's only $12.95 a month. And so, you know, and if I can, without it, I'd be stuck. So, anyway, I just want to, you know, let more. You probably got more stuff in the stacks that you. Did you say you're going to try to get in after the dental appointment tomorrow to work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an early appointment, so it won't affect the broadcast schedule the way that yesterday did.
Oh, okay.
And it's work on the kid's mouth, not work on mine, so I don't have to worry about, you know, not that I have a top that guy.
Yeah. So that's 200 miles worth of gas in your gas hog to go get the pizza.
100 miles,
there,
yeah.
There goes Agnes's paltry little chump change to go back into the pot to keep the mic hot. Oh.
Yeah, there's always too much month left when the money's gone.
Yeah, I ain't got much either, but a check's coming at Wayne if he just get his tired butt to the post office. And you might want to remind people when I hang up what the address is for mailing in.
I will.
Okay, thank you. So I don't have anything else to say tonight except I was just wanted to play off of David and Luke and suck up to. This is a non-critical. It's not a critique tonight. It's been a really good show, and I want to thank everybody for calling in.
I've enjoyed, when this show does what this show usually does, I wind up at the end of it better off than I was going in.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. It's energizing to get that kind of feedback and that kind of reciprocity for the energy that you put in and the conversation that you leave open. I mean the doors that you leave open for all kinds of conversation. It's rewarding for when people call in and honor you for that. So I guess that's what I'm doing. I'm just being a smart ass tonight. So but I call. I got some new minutes on the phone, but I don't want to use all of them tonight.
No, guard them jealously.
Yes.
You never know when you're going to cross Texas and be Roman.
I guess
is better than crossing Texas and being Gallic.
Yeah. Or Sicilian.
Being Roman, get it? Roman. Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
I said or Sicilian.
Right, yeah. I'll be here all week. Try the veal.
I'd rather have lamb, but anyway.
Yeah, so would I, but they won't bring it to the grocery stores here, so, you know.
I hear that. The last good piece of lamb I had was at the food bank in Williams, Arizona, and oh my God, I kept my whole. I got two little roasts. And they were wonderful. Oh my God! And I've been looking at lamb ever since then, and I can't even afford it.
Oh no, no! You got to go to the bank.
Yeah, I just, you know, I got to walk on past it. No, when I hit Texas, I usually try to do it all in like a one whole trip. I have, there's a place where I stop and sleep for a few hours and then just keep on heading on, because I can't even stand the thought of waking up and thinking, oh my God, it's still Texas. So I don't have to be bothered. And I like to do it at night when Malloy's ramping, and if I'm going westbound, it's always got a headwind. But anyway, so much of travels with Kate. I'm out of here. So as our friend used to say, I'll leave you where I found you. So you all have a good night.
All right, take care, Kate.
Bye bye.
Bye now. Kate always sort of keeps me on my toes because she knows how much I loathe talking about funding and so forth. But the fact is, you know, the numbers are what the numbers are. It's late on the 26th of March. We're about $700 out. Maybe it's six and change. I'll have to run the numbers, and I'll send them to John to update the bar graph on the website. The mailing address is Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive. P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Boy, PMB, 318, Beckley, West Virginia, WV, 25801. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. And it would be nice to not have to talk about this stuff. And for those of you who do such a magnificent job supporting Conversation Radio every month, please know that, you know, this is not aimed at you, because you've already done your part. This is toward the folks who have the wherewithal and don't. And we're not shaming, and we're not bitching, and we're not complaining. It's just business. I got that call today from our ISP. Haven't gotten your check this month, and the check has gone out. But still, it makes me nervous when I hear it, because I like being here. Everybody who does this, from Guy James to Mark Levine to me, Peter Godbold, John Fox, Billy Shears, Rick Goodner, Matt Sowards, whenever Matt Sowards' schedule settles down again, we do all this because we like to do it, because we like the communication, because we think that there is a need for some sort of honest discourse. And for my part, discourse that isn't sugar-coated. We believe, and you respond by saying, yes, yes, there is that need. And I echo something I read on another website. It says we need to reach 40,000 this month. We'd love to get ahead of running behind financially. The reality is to think of what we could do if we were well-funded. That's at $40,000 a month, and we're asking for two. But I think about that stuff. John thinks about that stuff. We've got a new advertising campaign underway to build audience. And we've budgeted for it. And it's a portion of the already limited resources. But we're just trying to get the word out there so people can hear your conversations, our conversations, and can thereby be empowered themselves to participate in the conversation. Because while I won't sit here and tell you that we're saving democracy or preserving freedom, when you participate in Conversation Radio, you actually do something that is profound in terms of what this country is and can be. Because if we sit and we listen to the right wing, or we sit and we listen to corporate America, and we don't ourselves make our own voices heard, there is no doubt in my mind whatsoever that we will not solve our problems. What we try to do here on the Horn is what is referred to, I guess, commonly these days as bottom-up problem solving. Not waiting for our so-called leaders to figure it out for us. Not waiting for a savior to arise. But to start the problem solving ourselves. And to begin it with a dialogue that identifies the problems and begins to identify at least potential solutions. That simply will not happen from my standpoint, from the standpoint of the Horn, if we go dark. Because there aren't many other places out there where you get the opportunity for conversation that the Horn affords. And I don't mean just me, I mean everybody on this beautiful, beautiful little experiment that you make happen. So, you know, if you've got a little extra laying around, we implore you, please, to be a contributor to the Head On Radio Network. You have the mailing address, and at headonradionetwork.com there are PayPal buttons there. You can subscribe or you can do a one-time contribution. We try to make this as easy as possible. And again, know that you have our heartfelt thanks for helping to keep this going month by month by month by month. And as long as you're there, we'll be here, all of us, and trying to grow, trying to add programs, and trying to respond to what you say you want this to be. Peter Godbold will be a repeat tonight, but he will be back tomorrow night, no matter what. Coming up at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, the Horn Section, John Fox and me. And after that, All Foxed Up, coming your way at midnight Eastern Time. Don't touch that mouse. Many thanks to John and Peter, who are so integral to making all the stuff work here. Many thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who is fundraising himself, because he has carried the streaming costs for all of this on his own back. WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you don't want to give to the Horn, if you don't want to contribute to the Horn, but you want to make sure that some portion of the Horn stays on the air, you can do right by Ben Birch. If you can do both, that's magnificent. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They work awfully hard, and they'd love to have you as a member of the group, and it's not expensive at all. crmw.net. Be part of the solution that brings an end to mountaintop removal in Appalachia. And remember, wherever you are, you're downstream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
last week.
What?
Yeah.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 104 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Friday, January the 18th, 2008, so if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m., on a Friday, that is January the 18th, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and talk to myself and to the guest whom I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304. 658-3333, that's area code 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, so if you'd like to participate that way, you're welcome to. I do try to check the email during the breaks. We've had an interesting week, have we not? Some interesting things have gone on with the Benny Hinn thing last night, and my goodness, I've had a ball this week. But anyway, getting back to the intro. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests. You'll find links to the guests' websites. You'll find links to the audio archives from the past shows, and you'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. There are lots of people in the chat room. You'll find links there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, also to the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find the donate button there to help keep the listener-supported Head On Radio Network on the air. As I've said before, the funds that go into the PayPal account are not used for our salaries. All of the hosts are strictly self-supporting through their own contributions. It goes to keep the streamers streaming and the packets packing and the cassettes turning and the CDs spinning and all of the things that we do to make this show. You'll also find on the Head On Radio Network main site the other progressive programming on the network. There are many wonderful hosts on the network. As far away as Australia, I am only a small portion of Strictly Confidential. Strictly Confidential is a small portion, rather, of Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you'll find links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. So you'll find all of that at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And moving right along, we have a wonderful guest this evening. I'm delighted to have this man with us. I've been talking about it, actually, for the last two or three days on the show. I've mentioned it Wednesday evening, I believe. I mentioned it Thursday evening, and we have firmed up the date for this evening. The fellow that is going to be joining us just shortly is Mr. Ronnie Kerr. Ronnie is a native of New Jersey, and he got his first break in action films like Absolute Aggression, and he moved on to Los Angeles, where he played in a list of movies longer than my arm. One of those films that was the lead role in, and the movie was called